And then we will start method and stuff, and the department will introduce themselves. Then we will start with the post office amendment bill. The Department of Community will lead. And Honorable Madam Bani, you talk through me. Honorable Siva. I'm separate you from Honorable Kronaval.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Patrick Bande. I'm from Mpumalanga province. I am the member of this committee.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Herman Groenewald, representing the Northwest province and member of the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be from KZN.
Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Lolia, the Committee Secretary. Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Good day, members. My name is Eric Bokati, the Coordinator of the Committee.
Good afternoon. My name is Renal Brito, and I'm the Research for the Committee.
Good afternoon, Chief, and good afternoon, Honourable Members. I'm Robert Luke. I'm the leader by the Department.
Good afternoon, Chairperson and Honourable Members. I'm Saki Mamashina, Director of Employment Deputy from the Department of Labour.
Good afternoon, Members. Good afternoon, colleagues. Chairman Gosikali, Department of Labour.
Good afternoon, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members. My name is Ken Opiri. I'm the Deputy Director General of the Department of Communications, responsible for ICT policy.
Good afternoon.
I'm sorry.
Good afternoon, Chairperson. Good afternoon, Honorable Members. My name is Dimarjo Mujela from the DLC.
Good afternoon, Honourable Members. My name is Malusi Ngolo from the office of the GST Law Advisor.
Good afternoon, Honourable Chief. Good afternoon, Members. My name is Ngun Mangu from the National Treasury.
Madam Chair and Honourable Members, I'm Michael Black, the Legal Counsel, South African Reserve Bank.
Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, I'm Nicola Dewis, CFO of Coast Bank.
Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, my name is Kiyabaka Amanti, Business Transformation Officer of Coast Bank.
I'm Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. My name is Shane Adam, Acting MD of Coast Bank.
Good afternoon, Chair, Honourable Members, and Honourable Chair. My name is Johan Odi. I'm from the South African Post Office in Coast Bank.
Honourable Chairperson, my name is Kenneth Mubo. I'm a Member of Parliament from the National Assembly and a Member of the Committee on Labour. Thank you.
Can everyone in the bag introduce, okay? Oh.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I'm Rizala Jacobs from PC.
Can you introduce yourself? Can you just say? For purposes of record, we must understand who is here.
Good afternoon. My name is Jan Nohum. I'm
yes,
a researcher with the Democratic Alliance.
Okay.
Thank you. In 2 minutes then.
Good afternoon, my name is Gunter Barrow and I'm from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
My name is Shakila Ibrahim and I'm from Ethical Political Consulting.
Ulilani Philip, SABC TV.
Grant Wilkinson, Goose and Case.
I'm a staff member in the Portfolio Committee of Labour.
Good afternoon, members. My name is Nombo Nyinga from the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mama. My name is Williams from Sunday Times.
Now that we know each other, I would like to welcome all of you This afternoon we've got a long afternoon ahead of us. Our agenda today is we will start with the South African Post Bank Limited Amendment Bill, will be B25B of 2013, and then it will we will follow with the Employment Equity Amendment Bill, Bill B31B of 2012. Without any waste of time, let me welcome the Department of Communications under the leadership of Mr. Phiri. Mr. Phiri, we welcome you and your delegation. Last week we had a briefing on this bill, and what is going to happen now, we will hear from the department. From us, we don't have anything, there are no submissions that we got, but can the department lead us in this regard? And then we will from there go straight to the bill. Over to you, Mr. Pierce.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, and we are very happy to be back here to the committee, and thank you for the lunch, Honorable Chairperson, because we have some bit of energy now. We have the UC team here that has already introduced themselves, and Chairperson, what we will do today is to go straight to the bill, to read for you clause by clause, and for your committee to probably concede to the amendments which we will present before you. As you have recorded, we have briefed the committee last week. We have had an extensive engagement with the committee members last week, and we believe today we will be able to lead you into the bill itself. Thank you, Chairperson. We will be led by our expert member here, Honorable Willie Bugela. I say honorable because sometimes Chairperson, he does want to rise to the position of honorable. But thank you very much, Chair.
Mr. Bugela has got a problem. I think he was flying, didn't he? But we will bear with me. We must all be patient. But I know because we are one, we are united, we will bear with him. Mr. Bugela, over to you. As I said earlier, we did interact with the department and we post bank last week on the bill. Today we're going straight to clause by clause. Mr. Bugela, I command those ears at this present moment to open in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ. Amen. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think my EDG has already given an outline of what was going to happen. I'm going to flip a bill and an X to make it easier for members to follow. The bill that has been discussed last week and the X that has been amended. What I'm going to do is to go through clause by clause as members agreed in the last week meeting. That should happen today. And then the questions, members, we do have the place of National Treasury and the Reserve Bank and the Post Office and the Post Bank and the team. If we look at the bill, the preamble of the bill that seeks to, the bill which is part of members, it seeks to amend the SA Post Bank Act of 2010. We've given a context last week, why are we amending this new law? So as to amend provisions that may negatively affect the operational autonomy and the independence of official banks. Members last week, they got a full briefing by the Reserve Bank as office for banks. Why do you want to amend this law with respect to the independence of the regulator? Furthermore, to remove any inconsistencies with the Banks Act. The Banks Act is a national law on all banking matters. This is a specific law for the Post Bank. So there's no way this law can contravene the national law which governs all financial matters in the country. And to provide for the transfer secretary, which is in the law. If you look at the very first amendment, the bill seeks to amend section 1 of the Act number 9 of 2010. Clause 1 of the bill amends section 1 of the SA Post Bank Limited Act 2010, Act number 9 of 2010, herein referred to as the principal act. 1A will substitute for the definition of the minister of the following. Minister means minister responsible for communications. And furthermore, the bill deletes the definition of the register of banks. We have given context that there are provisions which the register of banks was linked to in the act. Those provisions have been amended. So it forces us to go and delete the definition, because that definition now is obsolete or it doesn't have context as point of reference. That's clause one of the bill. Clause two is the amendment of section 3 of Act number 9 of 2010. Now, clause two members, it's amendment section 3 of the principal act by substitution for subsection 2 of the following subsection. 2, notwithstanding section 32 of the Companies Act. Close open vault and section 37 of the Banks Act, close vault. The post office shall, upon incorporation of the company, be the sole member of the company. Now, let's look at what section 3 says, section 3 of the Act, to make it easier for members to follow. Section 3 of the Act, subsection 2, is the principal act under the heading incorporation. The principal act used to read that notwithstanding section 32 of the Companies Act and section 37 of the Banks Act, the post office shall, upon incorporation of the company, be the sole member and the shareholder of the company. If you look at the bill now, we have now repealed and section 37 of the Banks Act. There are no exemptions. We've given context. The principal act was given exemptions, reference 37, reserve bank has presented that there are no class license in this sector. It's only one license. All commercial banks have got one license. With the supervision of the reserve bank is paramount. So this is what clause 262. Honorable members, if you look at clause 3, another heading, repeal of section 4 of Act number 9 of 2010. Section 4, clause 3 seeks to repeal the entire section 4 of the principal act. Let's look at what section 4 of the principal act used to say under the heading registration as bank. The entire section 4 now has been repealed because of the process that Reserve Bank had presented last week. This clause 4 gave a number of exemptions. There are stages that one to establish a bank must follow. One to register a company to become a bank need to follow. So all these procedures are contained in the principal act, which is the national law of the country of financial matters, the Banks Act. There's no need for this law to go and give a different procedure, which may cause a legal difficulty on interpretation in that regard. Honorable members, clause 4, under the heading repeal of section 8 of Act 9 of 2010. Clause 4 seeks to repeal section 8 of the principal act in its totality. So what is section 8 in the principal law saying? We're talking about exemption from tax liability. On this matter has been handled by National Treasury on the issue of tax liability. So this law seeks to repeal section 8 at what National Treasury presented last week. And I think the process and procedures that Treasury is putting in place, I think there's a meeting Friday to address these issues in the working committee level, how to address section 8 of the principal act. Honorable members, clause 5, under the heading Amendment of Section 9 of Act Number 9 of 82. Clause 5 seeks to amend Section 9 of the Principal Act A by substitution for Subsection 1 of the following subsection. The company has the powers to enable it to realize the objects referred to in Section 2 and by the deletion of Subsection 3. So if you look at the deletion of Subsection 3 of the Principal Act, let's look at clause Section 9. Section 9 now, Subsection 3 that has been deleted, say the company must comply with the policy made by the minister in terms of Section 26.2b, any decision taken by the board, which is contrary to the policy in paragraph A, is of no force and effect. We have given a brief context last week that the cause of adding protection of that provision would give minister powers to intervene at policy decision level. However, since the Office of Banks have got competence in terms of the constitution of the country to ensure that commercial banks or any other bank has got a competency to establish what call policy for the company. So such Subsection 3 has been deleted. If you look at clause 6 of the bill under the heading Amendment of Section 18 of the Act of 1952, Section 13 of the principle is hereby amended A by substitution Section 1 for paragraph F of the following paragraph. Has at any time been removed from an office of trust on account of misconduct or in bold. B by the substitution in Section 1 for paragraph G of the following paragraph. Has any direct or indirect interest in conflict with the business of the company or which has been in session. The previous or is a deletion in old because there is a new session that has been made. C, by the addition of the following paragraph. H, is not fit and proper to hold the office of a member of the board of a big institution as compared to the Banks Act. D, by the substitution of Section 3A of the ways preceding subparagraph I of the following ways. A person nominated of appointment as a member of the board must before appointment open bold brackets and upon a report from the minister close bold submit the minister a written statement containing the following. If you look at C, C has made an insertion of a new H and the shift of O which has been deleted and inserted in a new place. And the D, we are deleting open bold upon and upon a request from the minister. So let's look at what Section 13 of the Act used to say. If you look at Section 13 of the Act, there is no H. It's taken 1A to G. As you see now, O has moved because that is a new section H, which means that H will follow G. The provision says it's not fit and proper to hold the office of a member of the board of a bank institution as computed in the Banks Act. So if you look at D, D is deleting and upon a request from the minister. So now the process follows. Because the provisions made on the disclosure and disqualifications from the members of the board, when both members are appointed, the Registrar of Banks is the one who conducts a fit and proper processes. The Registrar of Banks does interface with the incumbent and the sitting board in terms of the status of the members who are non-executive of the board. So hands were deleted upon request by the minister. That's the sole functions of the independence of the regulator. Honourable members, Amendment Section 14 of the Act, Act 9 of 2010. Clause 7 of the Bill of Rights of Members 6 Amendment Section 14 of the Act A by the substitution in Section 1 for paragraph A and B of the following paragraph respectively. By notice in at least two national newspapers and in the Gazette invite interested persons with a period and in the manner determined in the notice to submit the names of persons invoking Section 12.1A up and bold. That's our fit and proper person to hold office member of the board of a big institution, let's copy the next act, close board. That is an elitist. B, in writing, invite the post office, which is the mother company on this institution, and chain with the concurrent of the reserve banks, open and close board, to submit the names of the president in visage, in section 12.1b, open board, that are fit and proper persons to hold office of the board of a banking institution. If you look here, the principal act used to give concurrent powers between the minister and the reserve banks to exercise. What happened is that we've moved that powers given to the independent regulator. The powers now lie in the regulator. It does not have to compare with the minister, because the regulator, his role, he does conduct fit and proper and then give results back whether this person is appointable or not. In this situation, they give minister a specific time to give reserve banks a pool of names to say reserve banks, I've got these five names. I want you to conduct the processes. Out of these five names, I want to appoint whoever sits in the board. Register of banks conduct, there's no concurrence, because that is the function of the register of banks and record back to the authority. This one was section 14.7 of the bill seek to achieve. On B, we have inserted the word end by the insertion in section 4A after paragraph 5 of the following word end, and the C by the addition. If you look at the addition, this is the banking requirements. There was a missing link in terms of experience. Now we're going to have number 6, which is the banking experience that the reserve banks will look at when they conduct the proper processes. And by the deletion of section 4 of paragraph D. So paragraph D has been deleted. Paragraph D has been deleted, and they were inserted a new, if you look at the qualified requirements on 4A, the proven skills, knowledge, and experience of candidates is 1, financial management, 2, project management, 3, governance compliance, 4, risk management, 5, transformation and diversity equity. Now the 6, which the bill has inserted, there are 6. Banking experience is one of the qualifying criteria that the reserve bank will look at. Amendment section 15 of the Act, number 9 of 2010, clause 8, honorable members, seeks to amend section 15 of the Principal Act. A, by the addition in section 2, after paragraph D of the following word, or, and B, the deletion in subsection 2 of paragraph E. If you look at section 15 of the Principal Act, under the heading resignations, removal from office, and vacation of an office. Now, what the bill seeks to do here, one is to insert O, and then on B, we delete subsection 2 of paragraph E. Subsection 2 of paragraph E. Paragraph E used to say, in accordance with the Banks Act, and after the Register of Banks has informed the Minister, is no longer a fit the professor to hold that appointment. So, hence, the situation of new or that subsection E has been deleted. This is the sole function of the Register of Banks, who will interact with the Section Board in terms of the incumbent status. Amendment of Section 18 of Act Number 9 of 2010, Clause 9 seeks to amend Section 18 of the Principal Act by A, substitution Subsection 3 for Paragraph A of the following paragraph. A must have a qualification or experience relevant to the functions of the company and must be fit and proper. Underline is a new insertion. Must be fit and proper to hold the office of chief agency officer of the bank institutions as computed in the Banks Act. There is an insertion that the bill has put in exercise in terms of the MD of the company. This person must have met all the qualifying requirements. This person must go through the proper processes. this person must also meet all the relevant criteria set by the Banks Act to be met, to sit as a member of the office of the CEO or the MD of the company. I've heard of Section 25 of Act 9 of 2010. Section 25 of the Principal Act is separated. A, by the substitution of Subsection 1 of the following subsection. 1. The Minister may open both with the concurrence of the Minister of Finance, close both, until such time as the company is registered as a bank institution in terms of the Banks Act. The other line is a new institution. Direct the company to take any action specified by the Minister if the company is being mismanaged, failed to perform. Now we've removed with the concurrence of the Minister of Finance, with the private members who were present last week, with Treasury here, that National Treasury as the Land Minister of Financial Sector, Reserve Bank as a functionary, our Minister may not need to concur with the Minister of Finance, because all matters of emphasis are clearly placed within the competency of the Register of Banks. So concurrence may be difficult because we may concur, but the Register of Banks may give a different opinion. So allow the Register of Banks exercise its authority, and the Minister of Communications will get the feedback as the process has been required. On B, by the substitution for Subsection 3 or the following subsection. 3, if the company fails to remedy the situation within the stated period, the Minister may, with the concurrence of the Minister of Finance, then put the process in place. Now, we've removed with the concurrence of the Minister of Finance. There is no more concurrence required in that regard. Amendment of Section 9, 26 of Act 9 of 2010. Section 26 members is hereby amended by deletion of Section 2 and 3. We have deleted Section 2 and 3. If you look at Section 26 of the Principal Act, we've now deleted Section 2. It says the Minister must make policies on matters referred to in Section 91G8. Members realize that already we've removed the function of policy making in this bill initially. So in this 26.2, we're also doing the same, we're removing. On 3, when making a policy or amending a policy under this section, the Minister must, there's a process outlined, that process has been repealed. It used to say obtain concurrence of the Minister of Finance, obtain cabinet approval, table National Assembly, Gazette, that process has been removed, it's been repealed. There's no need to go there because already that competence in us lies, post-making lies with the board. The clear duties of the board to establish policies of a bank, not a minister. Now, we have got a new insertion, application of banks, which is a new provision, 26A. In the event of any conflict between the provisions of the Banks Act and this Act, the provisions of the Banks Act prevail, as we've indicated last week that the Banks Act is a national law. This law is a specific law. It talks to a post bank as a company, as a legal person, subject of the post office. Now, between the specific law and the general law, if there is a conflict, the general law shall prevail. Because this one talks to one person. The Banks Act talks to all commercial banks in the country. So you give that law a credit to govern where the conflict is within the specific legislation. Subsection 13 of Act 9, substitution. Clause 13 of the bill seeks to make any substitutions of the state, transfer provisions, notwithstanding the repetition 5.1.1.3 and 4, 5.2, 5.3, 5.5 and 5.8. All these sections lie in what you call the Postal Service Act of 1998. Until the open world company is registered at the bank and the competition section for 2, former post bank is transferred at competition section 7. The former post bank continues to function without any interruptions. We have just made a transitional provision that while government is establishing this bank, in the process, before all requirements are met, in the interim, you don't tamper with the post-bank operations. Mm-hmm. This is what we are doing. The post-bank still continue to operate, one at the division of the post office. Two, they still perform all other functions that they've been performing. Until such time, they meet all qualified requirements. They become one legal person, they become a bank, and autonomous. Now, these provisions fall away. Because what we're doing now is to put a transitional provisions between now as a division and in future as a subsidiary or as a legal person or a bank in that regard. The simple ones, short tackle, this act is called the Transition Post Payment Amendment Act of 2013. Honorable Chairperson, I think I've done what you call us to do. I'll hand over back to my GD.
Honorable Chairperson, thank you very much. As you can see, this law is simply in alignment to the Banks Act as presented by Mr. Kugela today. And we believe we have ensured that the intent of the amendment as stated in the objects have been achieved through this this amendment bill. Chair, I have also forgotten to place on record the apology of my Director General, who has apologized that she couldn't join us today. And with that, Chairperson, I hand over back to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Perry, we do have the written apology of the Director General. Members, that was the close by close from Mr. Bukela. We thank you for that, Mr. Bukela. Honorable members, is there anything that members want to raise? But I think we heard last week we ended on the bill. At this current moment, we will go to close by close, and members will indicate whether they agree. If there's no one else who wants to say something, I see the state law, and you are shaking your head. So you are all fine. You are all satisfied. And now we will go, members, we will vote, go through close by close, and you will indicate if you agree. And I think all in front of all of us, we have this bill, the South African Post Bank Limited Bill. Mazambani and Honorable Krunewald, Honorable Mazambani and Honorable Krunewald, if you can really pay attention. I see you talking to each other, and you are really disturbing me. If you're going to do that, I plead with you that let's concentrate. Otherwise, I'll have to separate you. Okay, members, we've got in front of us Bill B25 of 2013. Can we go to clause 1? Members will indicate. Agreed. Clause 2.
Because what is much interesting is that people mustn't forget that we discuss office did have a lengthy discussion last week, and then also we pressed upon some of the stakeholders which we wish that they must be with us. They were with us, like the National Treasury, the Reserve Bank, and the State Law Advisors, etc. And also the submissions were there. And then also, what is very much the key fundamental thing is that this act, this is a national law, of which we all of us perceive that we wanted to see this act to be a better one, which is also in line with the national norms and standards. And then I think it qualifies. That's why I support it. We agree.
Thank you very much. You know, if we are united like this, I like it. Honorable Khunova, I can
see. It is not always like that.
Can see from your smile, you know, that smile shows me that we are really. In this committee, we have never been, you know, away from each other, isn't it? Honorable Khunova. And now that we have agreed on close fight laws, I would like to have a mover.
I move to
Honorable Jacobs move for the adoption of the bill, and Honorable Grunewald second for the adoption. And I will now read the report. The report of the Select Committee on Labour and Public Enterprises on the South African Post Bank Limited Amendment Bill B25B 2013 from National Assembly, Section 75, dated 13 November 2013, that the Select Committee on Labour and Public Enterprises, having considered the subject of the South African Post Bank Limited Amendment Bill 25B 2013, National Assembly, Section 75, referred to it, reports that it has agreed on the bill. Again, honorable members, I'm going to sign now on your behalf because you have agreed, and Ms. Honorable Jacobs has adopted, move for the adoption, and Honorable Grunewald has seconded the adoption. And I thank you. I'm going to sign on behalf of the members of the Select Committee. What's the date today? On Labour and Public Enterprises. At this present moment, Mr. Bukela and the department, Mr. Piri, I would like to thank you very much, and we wish you a speedy recovery, Mr. Bukela, on your ears. Yeah, oh, David, I think you are fine. Yes, thank you very much. The Department of Communications, you are excused now. If you like, you can sit with us, but we are not going to go to, you can stretch your legs, members, as they are going out. Thank you very much, Post Bank.
Thank you.
Let me give this opportunity to the Department of Labor. I think members will recall that last week we did a deliberate on the bill. And I will hand over to Mr. Mukali. He did hear us on the questions that we asked last week. And for now, Mr. Mukali, if there are any issues that maybe were raised by the submissions to this committee, to you, you can take us on board. And after you have done that, then you can explain the bill to us by its laws. Over to you, Mr. Mkhali. Let me welcome Honorable Muntisi, who is also a member of this committee, representing the province of Gauteng. You are welcome, Mr. And we apologize for starting before you arrive. Over to Mr. Mkhali.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, members, honorable members. As the Chair has already indicated, that we had a presentation last week, an extensive presentation and a debate in the committee last week. And we took the members through the bill and through some of the submissions that we made. And the submission that we've received, head of submission, there's nothing new that we want to add on those that have come in that we have not explained in the meeting. If the members allow me, I can then go to close by close of the bill. It depends on you, Chair.
Yes, you can continue. What's
that?
Honorable Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I wish to just place on the table that we have a number of amendments to the amendments which we would like to place at some stage during the meeting. And so if it's in order, if we're going to go through it clause by clause now, then we would be happy to deal with it on a clause by clause basis as well.
Okay, we hear you. It will depend. We'll hear, but Honorable Kroonewald, is Honorable Liz your spokesperson?
No, he's just the assistant.
Okay, all right.
Person, so I think I got it right.
Oh, I know, I was just asking for interest rate. Over to you, Mr. Kandy.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Honorable Members. The first long title, Honourable Members, it explains the bills, what is it that we're trying to do in the bills. I'm not going to go through the long title. I'm going to go straight to the first section of the bill that we are making changes on. Here is a very...
Can I make sure that we've got, everyone has got the right bill in front of him or herself?
Clause 1.
Do we all have bill B31B2012? Can we all look at the bill?
Yes.
Okay. All right, over to you, Mr. Mkhaliki.
The first section that we're dealing with is section 1. In section 1 of the Act, the present Act now, it indicates which organs are applicable to the law. And it says that the law applies to all organs of state, but defined in certain terms of Section 239 of the Constitution, but exclude local sphere of government. Now there's a contradiction, because Section 239 of the Constitution defines organs of state as including local government. And secondly, it has not been the intention of this act to exclude the local government. And what we're proposing here, members, is to take out that black part in the bracket written local government. The clause remains exactly the same, and it will apply to all organs of state as defined in Section 239 of the Constitution. Therefore, if that will read, it will include local government when you take out the exclusion of local government. But it will still exclude the Defence Force, National Defence Force, the National Intelligence, and the South African Secret Service. It will still exclude those, because that's normal in our legislation, we exclude those, but not local government. On page 3, honourable members, B, this section, honourable members, as we explained here, we're making a change here to normalize the playing field. Presently, the Employment Equity Act excludes white males who are South African. They are not beneficiaries, white males. That's what the Act said. Now, we think that it's unfair to then include males who are not South African, but who happen to be African, for example, or colored. If you've got somebody who's an African coming from Zimbabwe, when he is from Zimbabwe, presently, the company can, in addressing affirmative action, employ that person instead of employing white men. And we're saying that you can't have a situation where you've got South African citizens who are excluded by the law, and then you have people who are not South African citizens who are included by the law. And that's what this is trying to do. Therefore, it says that for you to be a designated grouping, you've got to be a citizen of this country, that's the first thing. And if you are not a, you are not a citizen of this country, you've got to have obtained citizenship, obtained citizenship or naturalization before 27 April 1994. If you are not a natural person who's been born in South Africa, then you can be regarded as designated because you got your citizenship or your naturalization before 27 April 1994. And the reason they simple is that if you come here after 27 April 1994, the assertion then is that you did not suffer the consequences of apartheid. We know all of us what happened in 1994. And the other area that we're talking about here is that if you can show that you were entitled to citizenship, but you did not get that citizenship, it could be because of your political activity, the federal government then decided that we're not giving you citizenship, and you can show that. Therefore, then you can still benefit, even if you get your citizenship after the date that I've mentioned, if you can show that the reason you did not get citizenship is because the action of the operative regime that existed before. Now, on C, we're making a technical amendment there because this refers to the Basic Condition of an Employment Act, it defines an inspector in terms of the BCA, and it make a reference to Section 65. Unfortunately, the BCA, the section that talks to inspector, the BCA and the powers of inspector, is Section 63. That's a change that we're making. Therefore, taking out Section 65, because it's a wrong reference. We're putting Section 63, which is the correct reference in the BCA. The next area under this clause, clause 1, to finish clause 1, is we make an amendment on the areas of serving of documents. If the inspector want to serve document to a company, presently, they must do it by registered post. Say we're in the 21st century, communication has moved. Why can't we use all available communication tools? And that's what we're doing. They're putting electrical communication, all of those that are used, and even the court cases that accept this kind of service. And we say, we go further, we say that if, for whatever reason, there's an invention that comes up 3 months after the law comes into place, and there's another communication tool that has been introduced, the minister should be able to prescribe that as also being able to serve instead of amending the law. That's what we're saying there. That's clause 1, Chair and members. Under clause 2, members, we're making another technical change. We're taking out categories. The law presently talks about levels and categories. And the amendment in clause 2 is taking out categories using only occupational levels. And it's more relevant to the labor market, the economy, and this is what we're saying. These are technical amendments that we're making. Now, on clause 3, members, we're making a small change by adding under this section another ground. Presently, the law says you can challenge a case of racism on the basis of gender, race, sex, pregnancy, at least the grounds, basically. These are the grounds. Now, the problem that you're having is that what happened when one white male believes that he has been discriminated against another white male? There's no race, there's no gender, there's no HIV involved. Now, we try to sort that, and that's the amendment we're putting is you add any other arbitrary ground that is discrimination, you should be able to go to court and say, I'm discriminated on the arbitrary ground. And if the court finds out that it's discrimination, you should be able to get any sanction from the court. And that's the reason that we're making that change there. Now, the next change that we're making in the area, we're saying that any discrimination on the basis of changes, we say that a difference in terms of conditions between employees who doing substantially the same work would be regarded as discrimination. If I'm doing the same job with my colleague next to me and I'm paid less, the reason for the payment of less is unfair, and then the law indicates that you can be paid less on the basis of your experience. It could be expense, it could be qualification, it could be your skill, it could be your performance. If I perform more than you, you produce 10, I produce 20, I can be paid more. But everything being equal, there should be no differences in pay, everything being equal. That's the opposite way. Everything being equal. And the next area that we're putting here, putting an equal provision for the minister to make a regulation that will help in assessing the implementation of this principle of work of payment or work of equal value committed in section 4, the payment of equal pay for work of equal value. And the minister must make regulation and say, how is she going to enforce how is she going to assess this new process? And we need to indicate to this member that this is a request of the International Labour Organization. The International Labour Organization says our legislation presently does not cater for equal pay for work of equal value. And the members, as they know, that we are a member of the EU and the International Labour Organization. On clause 5, on clause 4, members, same page, we're making a very simple amendment. Yeah?
Honorable Mr. Mkaliti, can we hear honorable, please?
Madam Chair, you need to guide us on this, please. We have an amendment which has an impact or deals with section 6A4.
Which page is that?
The one we've just been explained, it's on page 3. The amendment number 3, and it deals with section 6B4. Would you like us to speak to that now, or should we wait?
No.
All right, can I hear Honorable
Sibanda? Sorry, Chairperson, procedurally, we should have this, the department to take us clause by clause. We are still coming back if we wanted to reflect for any addition or subtraction in terms of our policy and in terms of our guidelines.
Thank you.
He was on a question. Yes.
Thank you, Honorable Sibanda. I wanted members to say themselves. And I think Honorable Grunewald doesn't want to tell the right thing what we do in this committee, the procedures that we follow. So he must, but he must also advise you, seated there next to you. Honorable Grunewald, assist us, please. Guide your colleague next to you. Honorable Mr. Mkhali, you can continue.
On clause 5, members, the last part on the on page 3, presently the law says that for testing, remember the law prevents testing for employment, pre-testing for employment, unless the test is fair and has been approved. Now, the major problem that they're having is that the problem in terms of the Section 8 of the Act now is that it says that for psychology testing, the test has been scientifically shown to be valid, can be applied fairly to all employees, is not biased against any employee or group. Now, who does the assessment? It can't be the inspector. And we're saying there is a body that is set up in terms of the law, that's set up in terms of the Health Professional Act 1974, and that body is the Health Professional Council of South Africa. Therefore, we're proposing that all tests must be done by them. On page 4, members, clause 5, in this area, members, this is an area about how you deal with cases of discrimination. Presently, if you've got a case of discrimination, in terms of the law, you go to the CCMA. The CCMA can only conciliate. It cannot arbitrate. We're making changes here. We say that if the CCMA, if a person who earns below the threshold that is set by the Minister of Labour, which is it is at the rate of I think 183,000 a year now. If you earn less than 183,000, then the CCMA should have a right to arbitrate in that case. That's what we say. The next issue that we're raising, we're saying that irrespective of how much you earn, if your case is about sexual harassment, the CCMA should be able to arbitrate in your case. And that's the changes that we're making there. And we're making changes presently in the law on C, members, is that in the law you can only take CMA decision on review. You can review the decision, not appeal. There's a difference. And in this case, this is the only case in the law where the law allows an appeal. That's the change that we've made. Section clause 5DC, it says that if an employer is not happy with the decision of the CMA, they can appeal to the labor court instead of applying for a review. That's clause 5. Clause 6, on the issue of the deadline of proof, we are making some changes, the members. The first change is that A and B has not changed what the Act is now. What we've done is that if you say you are a white male, you've been discriminated against another white male, then the onus is on the employee to show that that action is discrimination. Because under normal circumstances, the onus is with the respondent, the employer, to show that discrimination did not take place. If you look at 6, A and B, the onus is with the employer because it's around the 6 listed ground. C and D, 2ABC, is about arbitrary grounds where the owner reverts back to the employee. And the employee should show that a discrimination did take place and it is unfair. And then they should be able to argue that. But for race, gender, sex, the employee can only say that I've been discriminated. An employer must say, no, it was not discrimination, or it was fair discrimination. Remember, the law and the Constitution allow discrimination. The issue is, was it fair or not? On clause 7, members, it's the same issue there. We're making one small change, taking away categories again. Remember, previously we talked about occupational levels and categories. We're doing the same here. On clause 7. And on clause 8, members, it's the same thing. We're taking out categories. And on clause 9, we're taking out categories. We're not making any change other than just taking out categories. On clause 10, members, 10A, B, A is a 10A, taking out categories on 10A. On 10B, we, given the Director General the power to be able to go to the labor court, if an employer contravene the act in accordance with Schedule 1. Schedule 1 deals with the areas and the fines that should be imposed in the different areas. Will deal with that. But 10AB gives the Director General that authority to go direct to the Labor Court. The other change that we are making, members, in this area is technical amendment that we are making that are dealing with the changes that we've already made. In the bill, and the first thing that we are doing is that the reports presently the law says that if you get designated or you form a company and you must report, 12 months after you become designated. We making a change that says that if you become designated before 1st of October, which is the first reporting date, you've got to report on the 1st of October. If you get designated in April, any time from April, but before October, you report on the 1st of October. It's a technical amendment that clarifies when new companies should report if they become designated. If you become designated after October, then you'll be reporting the following reporting cycle. And that's the change that we're making here, just to clarify the issue of reporting. And we're also clarifying that presently, if a company has not reported, you can just notify the Director General that I have not reported. We're changing that and say you should not just notify, you should get permission for not to report. Because if companies can just notify and not report, then reporting becomes meaningless. You might have a situation that all companies say you are not reporting this financial year. And we're saying that companies should be able to say, we're not reporting, these are the reasons that we're not reporting, and the Director General should be able to say, I agree or I disagree with those reasons. And if the Director General says, I disagree, then, and you don't report, Schedule 1 comes into play. The Director General can go to the Labour Court for failing to comply with the law. That's page 5. On page 6, we also make sure that the Director General can also go to court if you provide information that is false or invalid. So company says things in their report that are not true, the Director General should be able to go to court on those basis. On clause 12, on the issue of, we've added the issue of, we'll make a change instead of saying that section should be headed income differential. That's what it is now. That section, the heading of the section is income differential. We've added and discrimination. Just as the heading, that's the first thing, 27A. And then on 27, your 12B, we making sure that the issue of income, the issue of equal pay for work or equal value, we could be able to go to the CCMA to court on that by making a small change, and we say under discrimination by which of the different terms and conditions and contingent for is unfair. We're making what you call a subsequent change from the issue of discrimination on equal pay. We have to make that. So clause 13, we dealing with the issue of the enforcement. And in this section, the law says that an inspector must have an undertaking, must try and obtain an undertaking from a company. If a company does not report 1st October, the law says before we do anything, we must get an undertaking from the company. Now, what does the undertaking say? First, let's explain what an undertaking is. An undertaking is a promise. We must try and get a promise from the company that says, I will report. Now, remember that you must report by the 1st of October. If the company has not reported by the 1st of October, it can only report by the 1st of October the following year. Now, it can only promise you to report by the 1st of October the following year. Because the report that comes in October, there's nothing that we can do about that. Therefore, undertaking is a promise. And we say, why should an inspector be forced to get a promise? That's the first thing. Therefore, we say that the inspector should be able to use their discretion on whether to get a promise or not. If they trust you as an employer, there should be no reason that you take your promise. But if you are an habitual breaker of the law, you were there yesterday, you did the same thing, you make the promise, you did not meet the terms of the promise, you come in again the following week, you make the same promise, the law says they must attempt to get a promise. So say, why should inspector do that? Why can't the inspector be given a discretion to be able to say, we're not taking your promise? That's the first amendment that we're making. And we're taking out all the issues and say that the issues around preparation of the plan are all put in the schedule. We've taken all the issues about equity plan, about reporting, are in the schedule. We've taken them out of this section. And if you make a promise that says, I will do certain things, we say the law should be able to say, if you don't meet the terms of that promise, the undertaking, The inspector should be able to go to court on the basis of that promise and take it to court. He don't have to issue with the compliance order again because you've given a promise that says, I will pay, I will report, and you don't meet the terms of the promise. Why must they give you something else again? The promise you make, it should be a promise you keep. And that's what this says. It says, if an inspector uses his discretion and take your promise, and then you don't meet the terms of that promise, the inspector should be able to take that promise that you've given and go to court and say, court, enforce this promise. That was clause 13, members. Clause 14 deals with compliance orders. Here, we take away the issue of compliance orders that must only be given. Remember, the law presently says that you must give us an undertaking and a compliance order. They go together. We're breaking that link. Because remember, we said that an inspector must be able to go to court with an undertaking. Now, if this section still says that you must link the undertaking to the compliance order, then it gives you that purpose. We're breaking that link in clause 14 and making sure that inspectors are able to take the promise that is the undertaking through court. That's the first thing that we're doing. The next thing that we're doing here, we're making a conceptual amendment with the issue of undertaking, small amendment where we're taking the issue of undertaking because we've got different funds. We think that for section 13 and 17 and 19 and 22 and 24 and 25, the inspector can enforce those two undertakings if they want, and compliance orders if they have no undertaking. And then the other section in the schedule that the inspectors, the director general can go direct to court. That's what we're trying to sort out there. And then the last issue that we're doing, presently the law says, if we should issue with an undertaking, you give us a promise that you are going to pay, do whatever is wrong, you don't do it. The law says we must give you a compliance order. We give you a compliance order, the compliance order says, please comply with the law. You don't do it. The law says you can still object to the compliance order, you can still appeal against the compliance order, and then you can still go to the labor court and oppose the compliance order. We're taking away the appeal and the objection. We say if you do not comply with the compliance order or with an undertaking, then let's meet in court. You had an opportunity. You made promise. You did not comply. What's the objection for? Can you object from your promise? We gave you a compliance order to comply with the law. You did not comply. What's the objection for? Let's go and go to court and argue the case in court. That's the change that we're making there. Now, the clause 15 are no changes. It's just subsequently to what we're doing in the repeal of 39 and 40. And clause 16 is about assessment. This is about GG reviews. The problem with the present law now says the Director General cannot enforce substantive compliance unless the Director General has looked at the following things. These are the things that we want to take out. First, it says the Director General must look at pool of suitably qualified people. The Director General must say, are there suitably qualified people in the labor market for me to enforce the law? We say, no, the Director General shouldn't be doing that. The companies can say, when the Director General says you didn't comply with the law, the company can say in court, yes, I did not comply with the law because there are not enough suitably qualified people in this sector. They can say that and let the court decide. But it should not be the responsibility of the Director General that must go out and check and say, well, the reason it did not comply is because they are not suitably qualified people. That's what we're raising with him. The company can use that as an argument. Remember also, the Director General will only go to court because you have not complied with your plan. Now, in terms of the law, the plan says that if you want to transform your organization by 20%, you've got to look. Are there enough skills? If there are not enough skills, what are you going to do to have those skills? It's still the responsibility of the employer to make sure that those skills are there. That's the first thing. The second one, it says, before the Director General enforce the law, the Director General must look at economic financial factors relevant to the sector. Now, the Director General must look at the economic and financial factors that are relevant to the sector. And you see, it's not possible for the Director General, before he or she enforce the law, must look at the economic situation affecting the sector. It should be the company that come up with that information and say, well, we're not able to comply with the law because the economic situation in this sector is this. We're facing very hard times, retrenchment, the economy is not growing, and all of those issues. But it should not be the responsibility of the Director General. That's what he's saying. The second, the next area that the law that the Director General must do, that the Director General must anticipate economic financial circumstances of the employer. Now, if the Director General is able to do that, then the Director General should not be the Director General. Take all his money, put it in a stock exchange in that company, because he can anticipate the economic circumstances of this company. Anybody that can anticipate the economic circumstances of the company that has been, and that has been still working, is a very stupid person. Because the person can make a lot of money. You don't need insider information because you can anticipate. Now the law asks the Director General to do that. To anticipate even CEO of companies, when you look at their performance agreement, they don't have such a thing that they must anticipate. Because, I mean, to ask inspectors to anticipate the economic situation of Sasol before they implement the law, we think it's just saying that don't implement the law. Because it ain't going to happen. And the last one that the law asks the Director General to do is that before the Director General implement the law, the Director General must anticipate the number, the present and the planned vacancies that exist in the sector. Now, if the Director General must say, well, what are vacancies? Before you implement the law and say you're not transforming, you must anticipate the vacancies in the sector, not even in this company, in the sector. But why should that be the response? It should be the company that said, because we're not growing, we're not employing more, and it's only when the company grows that you are able to transform effectively. The company that must say that. It should. You can't have a law that says that before you implement this law, you must check whether this company got vacancies or not. And that's what we're taking. This is a very big area, members. That's why I'm taking a lot of time on it to explain it thoroughly why we're taking away this section of the law. In order to make sure that we're not saying that companies should not go to, when we take them to court, they should not be saying these things. If they are able to anticipate the economic situation of their sector and they convince the court that, Your Honor, we cannot transform this organization because we think in 5 years' time the company is going to go down. If the court buys that, obviously it's our right to go in and argue the opposite court and convince the court that the company is wrong. But you can't say we can't go to court unless we've done these things. And that's where the chief is with the law. And that's the reason that today there's been almost no company that will be able to take to court on the substantive compliance with the law. We've tried to take it with Comair. Went to court with Comair, we lost the case. We didn't lose the case because of the substance of our arguments. We lost the case because the court said, you do not do these things. You do not anticipate the economic situation in the sector. You do not. That's what the court said. It did not say that Comair complied. Comair went and said, no, the law says, before you take me to court, you don't have to look on my performance. You must just do this thing. Have you anticipated the economic situation? Have you looked at... And this section also says, before we take one company, Comair, in that sector, we must have taken all the other companies in the aviation sector. Now, it means you can never enforce anything, because The question is going to be, have you done it? If you want to do it in the metal industry, there were thousands of companies. Have you done command A, B, C, D, F? And that's the problem with the law. And if we're serious about transformation, we want to deal with this issue. And that's what we do, remember. We're putting other measures that said that in implementing this, at least you must look what reasonable steps the company has taken to implement the law. We are saying that DG must look at what reasonable steps has the company taken to promote suitable and qualified. I mean, the action of the company, look at that, whether they are reasonable and put that. But the most important area here is what we want to take up. And that's what has been disagreement on. And I'm spending a lot of time on this because it's on page 8, members, on number 2, we, giving the minister, after consultation with NetLeg, the authority to make regulation. Now, let me go back, members, to page 7. If you look at page 7, the law as it stands now, this has been a big thing, if you remember the case in correctional service here in the Western Cape. The law says when the Director General implements this law or when companies do their plan, they must take into consideration the economic EAP, economic active population that is produced on a quarterly basis by state South Africa. That's what the law says. And it says any company doing this must take both, that's the operative word, both the regional and the national demographic. That's what the law says presently. Now the question is, members, if anybody can advise us, how do you take both of them at the same time? How to take into consideration national and regional? Even if you read that court judgment from correctional service, doesn't answer this. It's, if correctional service, if a good regional, and they say that's what the court, the law says, that's what the law says. The law says use both national and regional. And the dilemma that you are having in the country is how do you use both? Anybody who's got the wisdom of Solomon that can advise companies and ask on how to use both will make a lot of money. But you can't, you can either use one or the other. You can use both. But I don't say use both. Now, what is the solution from our side? If you remember, members, 2010 when we published the bill, there was a proposal to take out regional in the bill, and there was a big noise about that. And in the bill now, at the discussion of NetLeg, agreed that NetLeg is one of the areas that has an argument on between business and labor. We agreed to leave regional and national in the law, but we said we must give the minister, in consultation with NetLeg, the authority to come up with regulation that says to companies, how do companies select which demographic to use? In what circumstances should you select regional? In what circumstances should you select national? That's the proposal that's on the table making. We say, leave both. Because we accept that there's a problem when we say, if you say, use both black and white, maybe you can mix those colors with the gray. But in this case, you can't use both. And we say to enable, because we are going to get questions. It's going to be the department and our inspectors. Companies are phoning and saying, how do we use both? What does this section mean? Can you advise us? How do we use both? You can't. And that's why we say the minister must have authority in terms of the law to bring regulation that advise employers on what the consensus is to use regional and to use national. And the minister is busy doing that. If this becomes law, the minister will then come up with the regulation because it's got to come up at the same time that the law comes in so that there's no vacuum in the labor market. But that's what we're proposing on the next page, that's page 8, that whole paragraph, page 8, 2, 3, sub-paragraph 2 and 3, it talks about that. I went back so that I can link it up because it links to that. And our bid will not make a change on the issues of national and regional. What we're saying is that the minister, in consultation with NEDLAC, should deal with these issues and advise companies on what circumstances should they be dealing with demographics. On post 17, members, we dealing with the issue of the labor code, the powers of the labor code, dealing with two things here. That we, given the Director General, the power to apply to the labor code to enforce compliance. Presently, we're adding the Director General can go to labor court if the company is refusing to comply with the recommendation that the Director General is making. We're including a request. If the Director General requests information from a company and the company refuses, the Director General should be able to go to court to force the company to give that information. If the court says no, the Director General shouldn't get information, it's up to the court that we're putting that. And if the company fails to comply with the schedule, the performance in terms of schedule one, the Director General should be able to go to court in terms of that. And we say that the Director General must have time frames when to go in court. Companies should know that if they do not comply, the Director General with a request, the Director General has got 90 days to go to court. For recommendation, the Director General has got 180 days. That's what basically this 17 says. It gives the parameters for enforcement. The issue of 18 members is dealing with inclusion of the enforcement and arbitration. It's a technical amendment that we are making around the issues of enforcement, that if the director, the system may upgrade. Remember we said that if you end above the threshold and you've got a case of discrimination, the system can arbitrate and this operationalize that in terms of the law. It allows that and it says that the system can look at that in conjunction with a whole case in dealing with the issue that they are dealing with. On clause 19, we're making two changes there. The first thing that we're doing is that presently, the law allows anybody to take the Director General on review. On review, even on the recommendation, let's use the Comair case. In Comair took the Director General on review on the recommendation. And we're saying that in terms of PAJA, you can only review an administrative decision. If the Director General gives you a recommendation, that's not an action. It's not the Director General is not saying employ 20. He says, I'm recommending that to employ 20. You can't say then, I'm taking that on review because it's not a decision, it's a recommendation. We're making employment equity similar to PAJA, where in PAJA, you can only take on review an administrative decision. And if that says for something, then you can review that. And that's what we're doing there on 19 members. Then, the next thing is just to indicate where the fines are going to be. If we fine you 2% of your turnover, it must go to the revenue. It's a simple matter. It can't come to your own mind getting, but the law says it must go to revenue. And on section above 20, the minister, it gives the minister the right, again, to issue code of good practice to assist them. Lawyer, Court of Trust is, remember, it's nothing else other than an advice, basically. It's an advice, it's not law, it's an advice. It's a guideline that says to a lawyer, these are the steps that you need to do to comply with this law. It's an advice, and the minister has the responsibility to assist employers who are struggling with the law. And the only way that the minister does this is by introducing code of good practice. For example, there's a code of good practice on disability. It assists companies on how to bring people with disability into the labor market. There's one on HIV. It assists companies on how to deal with workers who are HIV positive in a way that is human, that is fair, to both parties. And that's what a good code of good practice is. And that's what we're giving the minister an opportunity to do, to assist them. The next issue that we're doing is that the present law on 21 presently says that the minister must make two sets of forms. That's what it says. Make two sets of forms for small business and big business. We say, if the form is one page, must the minister make two sets of forms because the form is one page? When you report to tax, you've got one form that you report on. And we say the minister should make forms that are easy, that are user-friendly to small business. And the minister has done that. If you look on the forms for reporting, we have 26 pages form, 27. It's been reduced to 12. It's been reduced, and we intend to reduce them further. We think that it should be half of that. We want to set up the forms in such a way that you don't have to fill them. The system must give you, just like SARS give you information. If you go online and SARS, you put your stuff in, it gives you your information, your previous information. So this was the information that we got from your employer. The same thing should happen in Djibouti. We want our system to be able to say to the company, this is the information that you supply the last time you reported. Do you want to change it? If the company makes changes in this area and it links with the other area, the system must automatically make the change there where it links off. For example, if you say in your employer, if this year you've got 10 employees, then you report that you've got 20 this year, the following year. The system must go directly in the recruitment section. Because remember, it means that you've grown, you've recruited more. Even in the recruitment section, the system must tell you that, therefore, you've got to adjust your recruitment by 10 because your company has grown by 10. We want to make it as easy as possible to online reporting. And remember, we must say that 98% of the companies that are reporting online. Reporting on small and big, they are reporting online. In the last reporting period, the numbers are very good online reporting. And over 22,000 companies reported. Of those, 98% have reported online. We've got about 600 something that reported manually. We'll persuade that 600 also to come online because it's easier. Therefore, we say there's no need to make two different forms for small and large. And of the 27,000, we think more than 50% is small business companies that have reported. On 22, it's about delegation. Presently, the minister can delegate everything except the sections that are there. We're proposing that section 53.2 also, the minister should be able to delegate it, to take it out of there. It's a very technical amendment. On clause 23, we increasing the fines. An inspector is convicted for contravening the act, the fine is increased from 10,000 to 30,000. This is not about compliance with the act. I'm talking about an inspector change information in the system, fraudulently, and those are the kind of fines that we put in there. And the next one is the same one. On the corruption, we increased it to 30,000, from 10,000 to 30,000. Secondly, on the turnover, we giving the minister authority to be able to increase the fines over the years. Presently, the minister can't, the reason this 10,000 has been 10,000 since 15 years ago. Now, if you take 10,000, you put in the bank, you sit there 15 years. In 15 years time, I mean, with inflation and everything, it will be at least around 30. 30,000. Therefore, the reason we're making the change, like they were saying, increase it to 30,000 and give the minister the authority to increase the fine on a yearly basis by a factor of inflation, so that the fine can't be behind inflation. Now, let's come to the schedule. We're changing the law. Present to the law says that if you don't have no previous convention, it's got a fixed amount. We say this is unfair to small business. Now, let's use an example. Let us say I'm a small business. My turnover is R1 million. R1 million, small business. She runs also a business. Her turnover is R5 million. She's a bigger business. Five million, I'm a small business, I've got R1 million turnover. If you find me R500, R500,000, as a lawyer, my turnover is R1 million. That's 50% of my turnover. We're arguing that fixed amounts are not good for small business. That's the first thing that we're saying. Therefore, those people, business that is alleged to percentage, they are not friendly to small business. The first thing that we argue for argument, we say a percent is more reflective and it will deal with the size of the company. If your turnover is 100,000 and the percentage that we talk about here is 2%, if let's say 2 million, your percentage, your turnover is 1 million and we're charging you 2%. What is that? Is that 200,000? I mean, my math has never been good in math. I think it's 200,000, something like that. But the law president says I'm going to charge you 500, half a million. And we think it's unfair. It's good for small business. Those champions of small business, they are killing small business when they do that. That's the first thing that we argue. But what they're doing, we're making two sets. We're saying if you fail to comply with the law in terms of Section 20, which is your plan, implementation of your plan, your own plan. The law says you must have a plan, you don't have a plan, or you have a plan, or you don't implement it, you fail to implement it, we go to court, the court must fine you for the first offense 1.5 or 2% of your turnover. If you don't report Section 21, the same applies. If Section 23, if you don't have a plan following your first plan, Section 44 is about the recommendation of the Director General. And then on the other section, the Section 17 and 19, which is about consultation, 19, which is about analysis and all of those issues with the fixed amount. For us, we want to turn over on everything, but there's a compromise in business. But okay, the set offenses will give you the fixed amount that you want. And we all agree with them to increase the fine to what they were on that all amount. The areas that we disagreed on, business didn't want to fix the turnover. But what we're saying from where we're sitting is that we think if you concerned about small business, a turnover, a 2% percentage of turnover is far better than if you're a small business. That's our argument. And Clause 28 is about the threshold on who's affected by this law. It's just about increasing the threshold. If your turnover is 6 million, you don't have to report on this law. You don't have to comply with this law. If you're in agriculture, if you're in agriculture, 6 million, you don't have to comply with this law. And that's what 28 talk about. It's exception. It takes people out of the compliance with this law. The 29 is about transitional arrangements on when this provision will take place. And it's normal in law that you've got to have a transitional arrangement, that's how to put it. And clause 30, the last one, members, is the short title that tells the members of society what the name of this legislation. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Mkalipi. state law advice. Is there anything that you want to add, Nata? Members, we have been going block by block, and now we're going to go block by block and agree.
Yeah, but Wunsha.
Welcome, Honorable Tao. Honorable Kroonewald, you will be the person who will be speaking. I'm not going to, yes. We're starting close by close, mm-hmm. But you must, don't let me, you know, say, Honorable Liz, you are the person who will be speaking as you said you want to speak. Can we go, Honorable Members, close
Madam
by
Chair,
close?
May I speak?
Honorable Lee.
And Chair, I will be speaking in terms of Clause 108 of the rules of the NCFP, which state that a council who is not a member of a committee or subcommittee may be present at a meeting of the committee or subcommittee and may speak on a matter before the committee or subcommittee. I am entitled to speak if I wish to speak. Thank you, Madam Chair.
I know you've got the right to speak, Honourable Liz, but also on the invitation that came to you, to the members. If you have been appointed as an alternative member, kindly discuss the possible need for official participation in the meeting with the party's full member and chief whip. So it's on the notice of the meeting that we send to members. Switch off. So, but you will speak because I understand the rules and I understand that you do have the right to speak.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah, but you don't have the right to vote.
Okay.
Honorable members, we will go now close by close. Once again, I understand that in front of all of us, we got the bill, the Employment Equity Amendment Bill, Bill B31B 2012. As amended by the Portfolio Committee on Labour in the National Assembly. Can we go to Clause 1, Honourable Members? Do we agree with Clause 1?
So we agree.
Okay, thank you. Then Clause 2.
We agree, Chair.
Three.
Thank you, Chairperson. We have a requested amendment there, inserting the definition section between serve and sustainable qualify. Substantially, the same work is considered to fall within the same job classification. The work is not identical in every aspect, nor it is interchangeable. Now, the reason for the amendment, Chairperson, the insertion of will create certainty on the matter of prevent litigation. The definition will bring South Africa further in line with the ILO conventions.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Kroonewald, can you switch your mic off, please? Honourable Member, you heard Honourable Jacobs?
Yeah, Chair. Can Honourable Kroonewald give us the amendment? Because he has not given us an amendment. He's just motivating what he wants. Because if you say Section 3A or Section 3B, there must be an amendment that he puts there, so that we must be able to look into that amendment, as it is.
Thank you.
Honourable Kroonewald, Honourable Jacobs hasn't finished, and I'll say to you, you can speak. Honourable Jacobs.
Yeah, Chair, you can give me a chance to clarify.
Okay. Can you say what your amendment is, Honourable Kroonewald?
Yes, I mentioned it, Honourable Chairperson. Amendment Section 6. Issue the word substantially the same work. This phrase needs to be defined. And then the requested amendment I already read out to you. And the reason for the amendment I also read.
Okay. Honorable Jacobs?
It is not clear. It is not clear what you decided to say.
Okay. Honorable, can you clarify? But before you clarify again, can I give this opportunity to Honorable Dow?
No, thanks, Chair. My apologies because there was quite the confusion so far as the arrangements were concerned, but it's not from your office. Honorable Groenewald, what I don't understand is saying that if we proceed with the bill as captured, it would be in contravention with the international law. Or what did you say?
Can I repeat, Chairperson? The decision will bring South Africa fair in line with the ILO conventions.
Okay. Honorable Dow? Okay. Honorable members, Honorable Jacobs? Honorable Groenewald, was you? Okay. You didn't have your amendment. Can we give this to other honorable members so that they honorable Jacob?
Yeah. Chair, if we are to follow this document, it says that under section, talk about section 21. Where is section 21? I don't see it.
Honorable Lee.
Madam Chair, give me a second. We're talking about this clause 3B, 4, subsection 4. We wish to place definitions in the definition section of the Act 4, the words substantially the same work or work of equal value. In both cases, we believe that.
Sorry, can I request you to offer the recording session? Okay, fine.
In both cases, we believe that it needs to be defined, that it can mean different things to different people. And it is too loose as it is now. And therefore, it could be used in a vexatious manner. And so we have proposed two definitions for those sections, which you should find on schedule we've handed out. On the second page, at the top of the page, you'll see there on the right-hand column in the top block, substantially the same work is considered to fall within the same job classification. The work is not identical in every respect, nor is it interchangeable. And we wish that to be placed as an amendment, as a definition in the Act. And then secondly, work of equal value means similar in terms of demand, effort, skill, and decision making performed under similar working conditions and in the same establishment. So those are two definitions that we wish to add to the Act in order for us to be able to accept the amendment proposed under section 6B4. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. After listening to you, can I request the department to clarify? Madam Khalifi?
On the two definitions.
Yes, I'm listening.
The proposal, it says, substantially the work is considered to fall within the same job classification. The work is not identical and in every aspect, nor is it interchangeable. For us, the issue, the confusion of the definition itself, what does it mean? We cannot understand what does it mean, nor is it interchangeable with what? If you look on the proposal that we put on the table, is that the network parties are busy as we speak to prepare to implement this law, to discuss the regulation on the criteria, because this bill says that the minister must publish the criteria that will be used to assess the compliance with equal pay for work of equal value. And that work, it's not easy work, is taking place. You can't just by definition try and put a definition before clarifying the issue. And that's what the parties are doing. Looking on the LAO and the old literature, looking at international best practice, and come up with regulation that says, and it's done by NetLink with business and labor, and that will say these are issues that parties need to take into consideration when they implement this legislation. And that's what the law says, and that's what parties at NetLink are saying, but it's up to the members.
Thank you. Honorable Sibande, followed by Honorable Jacobs, and Honorable Lee.
I'll set an example. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, when the presenter tried to present, as he indicated, the period, because some of their laws are very old. And then also he indicated that, I'll put an example, on the first one which you started about, you know, to appeal, to repeal all the apartheid policies. He made an example of exploitation of a man by man by indicating by white person exploiting another white person. So that is an intention. So I'm not yet convinced of the fundamental changes which is proposed by this. For example, also last week we had I thought that maybe from our side it was going to be healthy maybe to submit before the department come here because this work was submitted to us last week. They were presented for us last week. So there are advantages for us to make some submission if we wanted to make some submission. As, for example, as unions and other people, etc., etc. That is my understanding. So this one, I'm not yet convinced what is the proposal.
I do not agree with the explanation or the insertion that Mr. Liz wants to include in this section. What he does, he wants to preempt what maybe the court would say, because we know in the end we need to take this to court. So what I think they need to go to court, these are the matters that will clarify in the court of law. But as it is, we fully agree in the manner it was explained to us, the issue of same work and the issue of equal value. As a result of that, I propose that we accept this.
Thank you very much. Do you still want to say something, Honorable Lee?
Yes,
Madam Chair, it is exactly the issue that the DG is talking about that gives us great concern. When you leave this to the discretion of the minister, it can then be defined in a way which could be vexatious. And it's not good for the DG to shake his head at me, but for that's reality. And to try and say NEDLAC's going to sort it out, well, I don't see any reference in here to NEDLAC sorting it out. And this is a law. This is not a negotiation at NEDLAC. And so, Madam Chair, we remain concerned about these terms not being properly or at all defined in the Act. And we would plead with members to take this amendment seriously. Thank you very much. All the two amendments.
Thank you.
Just to say that the amendments, we did look at Canadian law to get the terminology, but perhaps there's room for change in the terminology for the DG's way.
Thank you very much, Ms. Honorable Liz. I think Honorable Jacobs has proposed that we accept the...
Thank you.
No, not with you. don't say thank you. I'm talking about what Honorable Jacobs has said, that we accept this clause as it was presented by the department.
That's so, why I'm accepting it.
Okay. So agreed, we are agreeing with clause 3.
Yes, we are agreeing.
Sorry?
I said I'm not...
So the DA, let's say the DA is not agreeing, but the ANC is agreeing. that you will note your disagreement. Can you note that? Okay, let's go to clause 4.
Just for purpose of recording, is it a disagreement or a sense of discomfort?
I think it's a sense of discomfort. I think you're putting it in a very nice way. But can you say, Honorable Liz, I'm saying it's a sense of discomfort. Honorable Krulevat,
You are doubtful, Honorable Krulevat.
You are with us, I know. Chairperson,
I disagree. I say that. I disagree. There's no problem
there. Okay, that was on the letter note. Yeah, we are agreeing with clause number 3, but we note the DA's discomfort. Clause 4?
We agree.
Agreed.
Clause 5.
Agreed.
Clause 6. Honorable Krulevat, Honorable Jacob, can you please come right off?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I think you've the requested amendment. I'm just going to read it. Add the following at the end of the subsection B, and then it is a C, any other factor that might be relevant. And the reason for the amendment allows courts larger discretion when determining when unfair discrimination occurs and allow for a better case of case determination to prevent vexatious legislation.
Okay, we heard what I threw. Honorable Krulevat, can you switch your mic off, please? Members, we have heard. Honorable Jacob.
Yes, Chair. No, I have a problem in the manner in which Mr. Krulevat is presenting this. Because he has given us this document. I would request to say if he wants this amendment, he should show us if it's section 6A2B. She says 2B, and we are requesting to insert this. As it is confusing us. We can't follow properly.
Okay.
Okay,
sir, you want me to give the current amendment as well, and then you will know exactly where we live.
No.
Correction.
If, like on section 6, if you say section 6, 11.1 or
11.2,
just that
will. Okay, this section is...
can you switch off, Honorable?
It is about 11.1. It starts with unfair discrimination is alleged.
Mm.
And then it's going on A, B, and A is did not take place, and B is relation and not on B. And then the requested amendment from our side, and the following at the end of subsection B. And then it is C, any other factor that might be relevant. And I read the reason of the amendment.
Okay, Honorable
Subande,
followed by Honorable
Jacob. You see, Chairperson, my concern is one, if you can look on what was presented to us, it doesn't talk to the document. So, as a Chairperson, give directions, because my concern is one, as the presenter was presenting, and coincidentally, he was searching an example of a white, black, white. Instead, there are a lot of types of discrimination. I'll put an example. Let's say my name is Mutikeni. Some people, if they can't pronounce it, they're calling an insult. That is part of discrimination. So if this, you see, myself was satisfied not to change anything, because it's protecting us. So I can't understand, because this one, it doesn't talk to this one. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Jacob.
You had your hand. Yeah, sure. I think that insertion is too broad and it's vague. I don't think we can allow such a clause to be added. So I just propose that I propose that we agree with section Clause 6.
Okay, then to Honorable Jacob, is proposing that we accept the bill as is, the clause. And I see Honorable Liz, you've got your hand up, and you must state whether you are disagreeing, objecting what Honorable Jacobs is saying or not.
Madam Chair, I'm not going to do that just yet. Thank you very much for offering that to me. Madam Chair, that is exactly the problem. We have to allow the courts more room to maneuver on these matters. And so if you restrict it as it's currently restricted, it is not going to give sufficient discretion to the courts, and that we believe the addition of Clause C in section will give the courts that ability. And it must really, at the end of the court that day, be the courts that make these decisions. So we stand by our amendment, Madam Chair.
Okay, Honourable Dow, by Honourable Jacobs. Then I'll give the department to clarify. Then we will take it from there. Honourable Dow.
No, Chair, with due respect, and of course, with the greatest of respect to constitutional mandate insofar as separation of powers is concerned and the respect for the judicial. I think we would be moving in a direction here that seeks to dictate now to the judiciary insofar as arriving at particular conclusions is concerned or are concerned. Because if I read these subsections, it basically what it says is that if you allege that I have wronged you, it is for me to prove that I did not wrong you, and allow therefore the judge to make a balanced conclusion. Now, if you want to insert a clause that then begins to appear as if you want to create a soft landing spot, it creates problems even for the judiciary, because it's like now undermining even the independence of the person who'd be presiding over that. So I would really persuade or attempt or request to use this opportunity to persuade us not to go into that direction, but rather to create space for that arm of the state to be able to perform its duties. Because as we speak now, insofar as the jurisprudence of South Africa is concerned, the one that is alleged to have wrong is the one that must prove his or her innocence. And that's what I read here. Not unless the department says to me that I'm reading something wrong.
Thank you. Honorable Dow, Honorable Jacob?
Yeah, Chair. The problem that we are having, our members this side, they're not here to make laws. They are looking beyond what we are doing here, because they want, as Honorable Tawir said, the soft landing when it comes to a court of law. So if we can just focus on what we are doing and deal with the law and forget what the court will say, we are not here going to preempt what the court is going to say. So if they feel aggrieved and they don't agree, they'll take it to court. And the court is the one that will decide. Let us not decide even before that will come to the court.
Thank you. Mr. Mkali, please.
Members, I wanted just to indicate this. In the court, when the court decides on factors, it's not about whether the factors are relevant or not. You can have many factors that are relevant. The question is, are they justifiable? After that, there is justifiable. Mm-hmm. You can raise all relevant factors, put it on the table, and they might be relevant. But the question that the court must decide, any court of law, they can't decide on whether the factors that you're putting are relevant. You can't ask that the court. You must go and ask the court whether the factors that you're putting in front of the court are justifiable. And that's the test. And if not, exactly that. It says exactly that. It says the court must look at all factors as long as they are justifiable. You can't ask anything from the court other than that. Now, if you say the court must take all relevant factors, then the court will take everything to you it will be this relevant factor, the next one it will be that relevant factor, to that one it will be that relevant factor. But when you ask the court to take justifiable factors into account, then the court knows what it wants to do, because it must be justifiable. For me, that's the issue, members, that I'm asking members to look at when deciding on the court. You can't ask the court to make relevant factors, all relevant factors, whether they are justifiable or not. Because you could have relevant factors that are not justifiable.
Honorable
Lee,
followed by Honorable
Jacobs. Madam Chair, I do not understand what the DG is saying. If it's relevant, then it's justifiable. I mean, this is an interesting debate about the use of the English language. And we are indeed saying relevant. We're not saying irrelevant. We are saying relevant. And so I'm afraid, DG, I don't buy your argument on that one. It remained up.
Honorable
Jacob. Yeah, Chair. I think now we are getting into a court of law now. as I said earlier, so I still stick to my proposal that we agree to section clause 6.
Okay. Honorable Jacob is proposing that we agree with clause 6. Any seconder? Honorable. And then any other deciding view, Honorable Honavat. Okay, we agree with the office.
The DA disagree.
The DA disagree. That will be noted.
Okay.
Thank you.
Once I say it on the mic. We disagree.
Well.
Okay, no, it's fine.
No, you see, it shows that B. For DA, it stands for disagreement.
Okay, clause 7.
Agree.
Thank you. Clause 8.
Agree.
Agree.
Clause 9.
We agree.
Clause 10.
We agree.
Clause 11. Honorable approval.
Thank you, Chairperson. Once again, this is Section 21. 11, Section 21 of the Principal Act is hereby amended, and that is where you must be now. The requested amendment from our side is to remove all amendments to Section 21 and leave the section as is. And the reason for the amendment, removal keeps the requirement of reporting every 2 years. Removing the amendment will prevent extra administrative burden on small businesses adding their growth.
Okay.
You know, even where one was tempted to agree, but the extent to which is presented. He's reading his own document. Because the one that he gave us,
he doesn't have this.
So it's very difficult to follow him. Exactly what is it that he's saying?
Chairperson?
Wait, Honorable Kunavat, I haven't given you a chance to speak. Honorable, I agree with you. I was reading this, I was even asking the one here next to me whether I do have the right document. But you want to clarify, Honorable Kronewald, and then...
No. Chairperson, thank you. The reason for the amendment is not on that document.
No,
so I have it here in front of myself.
Okay.
Chairperson, number one, I'll request us to relax.
Yeah.
To cool down. Yes, to cool down. Number two, the thing is this now. We ought to be careful we deal about Parliament here. And when we deal about Parliament, we have people from the legal session and like people who can advise us, whatever. As I indicated earlier on, and all what you said by Honorable Madawa, that you see, to me, it is very difficult to follow up, because we wanted to follow up so that if there is anything which we feel can be taken, that's where we can consider it. But now, with this discount, and
yes.
And what I was going to Yes. Is that protect us if when is necessary, so that we cool down.
We don't want to be interpreted
wrongly, so because we talk about this, which we wanted to repeat, some of the things which are going to help the workers.
Thank you, Honorable Jacob. Honorable Commander, also, you yourself relax because you were out just now.
Yes.
And we are talking about this wrong document that we have in front of us. And we are trying to give Honorable Kunevas a hearing so that then we can assist him. But now, because we got the wrong document, it's difficult for us. So we are all relaxing because we are dealing with a serious legislation that is going to affect the workers of this country. Honorable
Chair, if you remember well, I complained about this document. And I think it's time that I have to give it back to Honorable Bruno. Because it is not assisting us.
Thank you very much.
Because if he wants to make those proposals, I think we need to have those documents to see what kind of proposals that they are putting to us. And it should be written just like here, to say the designated employer, they include their proposal so that we must be able to read it. But then if he's reading it alone and he wants us to agree with something that we have not put our minds on, as a result of that, I propose that we accept the clause as is.
Thank you, Honorable. Jacob, the proposal has been made. No, wait, Honorable Lisa, I'll give you a time. The proposal has been made. I want a second to the proposal that has been made by Honorable Jacob. Honorable Sibande?
I do second the proposal by Mr. Jacobs.
Okay, so the proposal has been accepted and we agree with Clause 11. Yes.
I disagree.
Put your mic on.
We haven't finished talking
about
it.
Yeah.
No, put your mic on and then you disagree.
I disagree, Honorable Chairperson.
Okay, the disagreement of the DA will be noted.
Madam Chair, I wish to speak, please.
Honorable Member, Clause 12.
Madam Chair, I wish to speak, please.
Honorable Lee, the proposal has been made.
Madam Chair, I am simply asking for my right to speak. I have not had a right to speak on this floor.
Madam Chair, I would also want to speak.
Honorable Jacob.
Yeah, Chair, the right to speak is not unlimited. You are the Chair, you give us direction. You have the right to give it, and you also have the right not to give it. That's your prerogative. So you have given the chance, to speak and you're spoken. And we have made a proposal, there has been a counter proposal. That's a meeting procedure. Because I proposed there was a seconder and you requested for a counter. They have countered. What else do we have to speak?
Thank you very much. And I said, Honorable Sunovat, I'm speaking. Can your hand go down? I said there was a proposal to accept. And then there was a seconder to that proposal. And then Honorable Sunovat said to disagree. And then now, what is speak that you members want. I said the disagreement of the DA is going to be recorded. And now I'm on clause 12. Thank you. Clause 12, Honorable Members.
Chairperson, my
answer. No, I'm saying we are on, is it for 12, for clause 12? If it's for clause 12, it's fine. No, clause 12, Honorable Members, we are on clause 12.
Thank you.
On the point of order, Madam Chair?
I'm not out of order, Honorable.
On the point of order, Madam Chair?
Honorable Lee.
On the point of order, yes,
Honorable Lee, I'm the chairperson of this Select Committee on Labour and Public Enterprises, and I am running this meeting as I'm supposed to be running. And I'm saying now we are on clause 12.
So you're shutting down the debate. Thank you.
Chairperson, I requested to you, I know that you're on, may you allow me to comment this thing?
No.
Chairperson, there is
when
a thing.
Honorable Sibande, I closed.
Okay.
I said we are on clock 12.
Okay, fine. Let me leave. Yes, I'll go to clock 12. I wanted to call something. I'll...
You're talking at the end.
Yes,
can we go to clock 12?
Yes,
ma'am. Are we agreeing on clock 12?
Agreed, ma'am.
Clause 13, Honorable Kroonenvang, can you please so much open your friend?
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll ask the members to listen when I give a reason for the amendments. So, the request that
if those amendments are all the right documents that is in front of the members.
I'll read it here, but what I have
okay,
in front of me, that's my right. remove all amendments to section 36. Reason for amendment? Removal will allow labor inspectors to continuing obtaining written undertakings, allowing flexibility to the act and less draconian approach to compliance. Removal will also maintain the current certainty surrounding undertakings to comply and prevent uncertainty from setting and in and allowing the minister to draw regulations on the matter.
Yeah, 13, Honorable Kroonenvang, Zone 13.
Yeah.
Motivation?
The reason for the amendment?
Yes. The members are requesting you to motivate so that they can hear you properly, clearly, why you want to inspect those amendments. And can Honorable Lee also listen, because I don't want afterwards to say afterwards, I don't want you to request to speak. I'm giving you this opportunity now to motivate. Honorable Kroonenvang, first, and then you will follow. You know,
Honorable Lee, will do it, thank you.
Honorable Lee, motivate. Honorable colleague is your comrade. Is that your comrade?
It is indeed my comrade.
We are not comrades.
Okay.
Indeed we are. I mean, a term that doesn't belong to anyone, Madam Chair.
Since when I come here?
Madam Chair, I must say it on record up front that I do find the proceedings of this meeting to be somewhat particular in the sense that it would appear that the amendments are being rushed through, that there's no serious note-taking of our proposal. And that is unfortunate. And we are a committee of parliament. And I know that I, like all of us around this table, I hope, believe that we should be of good humour. And I will make many a joke and so on. But in doing all that, we need to look very seriously at what we're doing. And if indeed the matter is simply to discard our amendments or our proposals, that is a very sad state of affairs. Madam, in terms of this section, section 36, the question there really is a question of, again, being far too prescriptive about what the inspector's role is. The inspectors should be able to work with employers to assist them to get them to comply, if that's what you want. It is far too prescriptive and too draconian. And so it also gives uncertainty to the undertakings themselves. If one were to leave this particular section as it was previously, our amendment is quite simple, really. Our amendment is that we do not amend the original Act. Madam Chair, I need to put on record that we did not support the original Act, and we do not today support the original Act. However, these amendments as proposed make the original Act even worse than it already is, and therefore we are trying to mitigate the impact of the amendments that are now proposed. And so our amendment to the amendments in terms of this section is that it's as bad as it is now, it is better than the amendment that's proposed. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Sibande. Then
Honorable Sibande.
Chairperson, to you, I humble myself in front of you, because it's unfortunately, Honorable Member, this is his first time to be with us. I want you to clarify the procedures of the meeting, because
you allow him for the preamble of his contribution, of which the percentage which is given outside there, as if we don't know the procedure of the meeting. The procedure of the meeting, the person is supposed to raise his hand, and then the chairperson appoint the person, rather than just jump in like that. And secondly, they also, from his own input, as if maybe, I don't know what is happening. So what I'm appealing is that nobody said we just reject. We said give us directions and motivation and give us proper documents so that we can follow and take whatever we wanted to take. But unfortunately, it seems that they are misleading us. So you want us to go to the same track. While, as I indicated earlier on, there was a presentation where the submissions were authorized. There was an opportunity to make any submission. And then with us, I think we were still on the right track. Therefore, as I indicated on earlier on, that we support the presentation as it is. Thank you.
Thank you.
No, Chair, I think you should have corrected that by saying we are not allergic to engagement.
Mm.
We are not allergic to debates or whatsoever. But equally so, it is important that we must do so to ourselves as honorable members. Because I find it very difficult for honorable leads to say they do not support the principle.
They did not support the principle act. Even
and now, they do not support this amendment because according to them, they are draconian. But I want to strike a balance here. At what point do you say something is draconian or you reject something if the one that seeks to correct, the one you disagree with, seeks to advance and improve the lives of those who are negatively affected by the very principle? But the issue here is that employers did not comply. The state did not have the instrument to force the employer to comply. And who are the people who are suffering? Are they not the very same voters that made us to be honorable members here today? And now we're coming here with amendments that seek to improve their lives. And then we say that this is draconian, precisely because it is going to affect the one who is comfortable to abuse the very same people who have put us where we are today. I think it is quite unfortunate. It is not honest to ourselves. I won't say you are lying. It will be unparliamentary.
Honorable Lees, I told you earlier, you are not a member of this committee. And you are not even an alternate. So if you are going to misbehave in this meeting, definitely I'll request you to leave this room.
My view is as simple as here is an instrument that seeks to strengthen the state in order for the state to improve the lives of our people by forcing compliance or by creating an environment where in which people who do not comply will then be subjected to, I don't want to use the word punishment, I don't know, lack of would maybe a better word, maybe because of English was never my first language.
Yeah.
But I said you said for the improvement in the world. And there's no better way.
Mm.
And I mean, I would not sleep at night by not supporting this. My conscience won't allow me. Therefore, I move forward to support this.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chau. And this clause also, if we, last week we passed the LRA, and this clause is actually agreeing with the LRA that we passed last week. So, Honorable Chau has proposed for the acceptance of that clause. Honorable Jacobs, you had your hand up.
Yeah. No, I can't do that, Chair. But let's correct this. Honourable Lister is not satisfied in the manner you are handling these meetings. I think
on you... Point of order, Madam Chair? I did not at any stage say I wasn't satisfied with the way you are handling the meeting.
What did you say?
I'm not going to repeat what I said, but I did not say it.
Yeah, Chair.
Honourable Lister, I said, if you're going to do what you do in other meetings, I'm not going to allow you to do that in this meeting. So if you speak, I gave you a chance to speak, and if you want to speak, you raise your hand and I'll point you. But you're not going to speak. Honorable, I see maybe you've got some other commitment outside. You are pushing me to say you must move out of this room. So please, respect this meeting, respect me, and respect the members. Honorable Jacobs?
Yeah, Chair. You see, if somebody wants to want our support, he must be able to convince us. He don't just have to impose and say we have to agree. In fact, we have to apply our minds on what he is proposing. But as it is, we find it very difficult that we can agree with anything. That we don't have it in black and white, we can't see what is happening. But as it is, I'm also supporting this because this I mean, it comes as a result of practicalities that were experienced by the department. So we are trying to correct that. So if somebody say we don't have to put this, I don't know, because they were complaining about the past one. It was also bad. It was a better devil than this one. So it means that one is a better devil. I don't know this one. It will be what now? Thank you.
Thank you for accepting. So, 13 has been agreed to. And,
the person, we disagree. On the DA side, we disagree.
The disagreement of the DA will be noted. Yeah. Honorable Tao.
Can I just remind Honorable Kroonewald of one thing? That at some point in the House, I passed a motion around labor inspectors insofar as what I've observed in my own constituency and the kind of things that weakened inspectors.
Mm-hmm.
And I then went as far as saying, to me they appear like toothless tigers. Honorable Groenewald made a comment to say that we need to buy them false teeth and stronger corpses. Now, I thought maybe this is taking a there. And now he's objecting to that. So I just thought that I must remind you.
No, I know what you do. I know why Honorable Groenewald is in this situation today. He's not the Groenewald that we know. Okay, let's go to clause 14.
Agree.
No.
So you disagree?
Yes, I disagree.
Okay, disagree that the disagreement of the DA will be noted. Clause 15.
Agree.
Honorable Kroonewald.
Sorry, Chairperson, you're a bit too fast for me now. I disagree.
With 15, okay.
Yeah.
Honorable Kroonewald, the DA, not Honorable Kroonewald.
DA, yeah.
DA
disagree.
Disagree. Honorable Lee.
Mr. Chair, not only do we disagree, but we actually have an amendment. And so it's not just a question of disagreeing. If we are now talking about section
15,
which deals with section 39 and 40 of the Principal Act, we move that amendment be deleted from the bill, and that the Act as it stands remain as is. And Madam Chair, the same would apply to clause 14, that one should also be deleted, and please may that be recorded for future purposes. We'll leave it at that if you feel that's sufficient.
Send Honorable Jacob.
Yeah, Chair, we are on clause 15. We can't go back to clause 14.
Okay.
I think the relevance should only be clause 15 because we have already passed and taken a decision on clause 14.
Yes. Honourable Liz.
Madam Chair, we've raised our strongest objection to the rail reading that is now taking place. This clause 14, we are entitled to make amendments, and we are placing those amendments on record, whether it is debated or deliberated on or not.
Honourable Jacob.
Chair, I don't think we need to allow this, because Honourable Liz is out of order. We are dealing here with clause 15. We are not dealing with clause 14. Whatever he wants to raise, he should have raised it under clause 14, not under clause 15.
Chairperson, I didn't like to do repetition.
I
But the situation is forcing me to do repetition. See, I can't understand how is the behavior of Mr. Lee, in particular for today. Because procedurally, you were in the right and we correct, position, and also the speed of which my honorable member next to me, he said, no, you were a little bit further to me. You were saying, you were calling each and every clause. Clause 13, you gave us a chance to elaborate. Clause 14, you gave us a chance. Why should we go back to and fro? That is not the procedure. We are dealing with clause 415 now. I request that all the things, the coins which he raised on the clause which we passed already, must be recognized.
Thank you, Honorable Subanda. I said, even to myself, I said to Honorable Lindu, we have passed clause 14, we are on clause 15. And can you motivate your clause 15, Honorable?
Thank you. Chairperson, requested amendment, removal of the repeal of section 39 and 40. The reasons for the amendment, removal of the amendment allows businesses to object to compliance orders in a cheap and easy manner, thereby relieving burden on not only small businesses, but all businesses. Removal will prevent the minister from issuing regulations on the subject, thus creating certainty with regards to objections and preventing unnecessary ministerial discretion. The removal of these sections is because the Department of Labor wants to facilitate quick enforcement. However, the DOL has not shown evidence of how the repeal will change this, particularly if it is considered that the main reason for the shortcoming of the enforcement system is the absence of suitable resources for the labor inspectorate. Not inquiring compulsory or voluntary conciliation before a matter goes to the labor court will further block these disputes resolution system rather than improve it. Further, the removal of the limitation of section 39 and 40 does not consider section 157(4) in the LRA, which entitles a labor court to refuse a matter that has not had satisfactory conciliation.
Honorable Jacobs,
I wonder who was writing for you, Honorable. But
the minute
when you read, it's difficult for me to
tell
what
you
want to say.
Chairperson,
I read it.
Sir, you know, it's a little bit difficult. As I've said, that if you want to make an amendment, you have to convince us. And you indicated that he's ready, but we don't understand what he's ready. But also, he talked about things like it will be cheap. It won't be cheap to go to court. What they tested, it must be cheap labor, cheap cost, at whose expense? Because these are the employees who must also benefit. But all the time, the employer just wants profit at the expense of cheap labor, cheap cost, and so on. So, here, I propose that we agree with clause 15.
Okay, the proposal by acceptance of clause 15 has been raised by Honorable Jacob. Any seconder? Agreed. Thank you. We agree. Honorable Kruneval?
Disagree. The DA disagree.
The DA disagree. The DA disagree has been noted. Let's go to clause 16. Agree?
Honorable Kruneval,
put your hand up.
Thank you, Chairperson.
You must help us in order to be able to help
me. Requested amendment, again, remove all amendments to section 42 and leave the section as is. And the reason, therefore, is the removal of amendments will prevent fast discretion of the DG, preventing subjective assessments, compliance, and abuse. Removal will prevent the minister from making regulations setting out assessments compliance, since assessments compliance will be set out in law already. This will create certainty on compliance.
Speak of your mic, Honorable Kruneval. Members, that was the motivation of Honorable Kruneval for clause 16. Honorable Jacob?
Thanks, Chair. Although I still repeat it, it's difficult to follow what the motivation is, but Chair, These amendments that have been put here, it is because of practicalities, as I said. And now, to say the DG will be having more powers, the minister, we are preempting. We are thinking what the DG will do or what the minister will do. But I think the clause of the amendment as it is, they are fine. They cover a number of things. Therefore, I propose that we accept it.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I do support my honourable member UJ Cox with this motivation. Remember, the DG, I mean, the presenter, tried to explain to us the impact of this law. How do we want it to make it stronger so that it can give more power to the DG and also to whatever, to the minister, in order to help us to minimize a lot of challenges which we're anticipating. Maybe my colleagues are happy with some of the incidents which are happening in farms, whereby some of the farmers are being killed unnecessarily. So yes. So we want to make sure that it balances, because this the proposals which are there at the moment, they want to balance, and they also want to reduce all tensions in the farms or in everywhere where in the workplace. Thank you,
Honorable Sibande has seconded the proposal from Honorable Jacobs. They say we agree. Honorable Lee, are you objecting?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, you know, it's fascinating that we bring in such what, in my opinion, is completely irrelevant issues. Completely irrelevant issues. This has got nothing to do with farm matters, Madam Chair. Absolutely nothing at all. What this has got to do with is stifling economic growth in our country. This has got to do with stifling creation of employment for our people. Employment that is desperately, desperately needed. Madam Chair, Section 42 is one of the worst possible clauses in this particular set of amendments. And it will lead to job losses. And so, Madam Chair, I would beg members to restrict their comments to the issues around these amendments.
Honorable Dow.
No, thank you, Chair. If job creation is going to be linked with the abuse of workers, then I wouldn't really agree with the notion that says that this law is going to stifle economic growth. If job creation is linked to lack of compliance with the law, that seeks to create an environment where all South Africans shall respect one another and their contributions to the country, then I would not agree with a notion that says that it would regress our ability to grow the economy of the country. There's no way that it can happen. And you know, I was just thinking to myself, who knows in the next 5 years I may decide to go into business? Mm-hmm. Who knows? And I'll be faced with this kind of a legislation. Mm-hmm. Why would I have a problem with this kind of a legislation if I comply? Mm-hmm. Because all I need to do is just to comply. Then I won't be faced with all these penalties, inspectors being on my neck and all that. All I need to do is to respect my employees and to give them what is it that is due, to give them what is due unto them. So, thanks.
Honorable Sibande.
Hey, I'm worried because Honorable, I will just read my mind, but I will end with this. Honorable, this other factors of economy. You must know the factors of economy. And you can't divorce the workers with economy. Because here we're talking about reality and practicality. We're not talking about theory. That's why then there is a problem with the people used to have and the people doesn't have. Because some of the people, they wanted to remain the status quo as it was before. Here we wanted to balance so that it can assist us to minimize some of the challenges in the workforce, which will generate the economy, which we're talking about. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Lee.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I'm fascinated, really, that the Act is now going to control labor relations. I thought we had the Labor Relations Act for that. And this Act, in fact, has no impact on labor relations. It's got to do with who is employed and who isn't employed. And so I don't think that we should be debating what the impact on labor relations directly might have. It might have an indirect, but it certainly isn't intended to protect employees.
I think Honorable Liz is speaking for well-off business people who still want to exploit the workers. And I believe what we need to do, we need to liberate our people from economic oppression. Because what they are doing here, they are just defending their rights. So it is a duty, or it is correct that we now liberate our workers so that they must be well off, just like as they are. Because they are also talking about the issue of that this will minimize job creation. They are not even creating jobs. What jobs are they talking about?
Thank you. The earlier proposal that we agree with this clause, and then it was disagreed by the DA. So the DA disagreement is being noted. So we are agreeing with clause 16. We are now on clause 17. Clause 17, honourable members, agreed. Thank you. Clause 18.
Agreed.
Okay, Honorable Dow.
Just before 18, Chair, probably we can just get a response from the department here. It's 3. Where conceived Director General has not instituted proceedings within the relevant period contemplated in subsection 2, the request or recommendation, as the case may be, lapses. You know, what worries me is then, okay, after lapsing, what then? Can you reinstitute? Okay, no, that's fine. I just thought that he has lost it then. Can't do anything.
Just maybe to remind you that the Honorable Tao also arrived late, whereas the department has already explained. So we are on clause 18.
I agree.
Clause 19.
Agree.
Clause 20.
Agree.
Agree.
Honorable
Tunabas,
you are disagreeing.
Disagreement? Yes.
With an amendment? Okay, can you come with the amendment
motivate? We're asking for the removal of all amendments to section 53.5. The reason for the amendment? Removal prevents the minister from issuing a code of good practice on employment equity, compliance, and prevent EE being governed by the material regulations. And also, removal is in line with waiting to keep section 42 as it is to prevent discretionary on subjective determination of compliance.
Okay. That was the motivation. Can we switch off? That was the motivation for Honorable Groenewald for section 20. Honorable Sbande?
Chairperson, I support the proposal. The reason is that if we record very well, practically we had some lot of strikes which were happening there. At the end, the people point the fingers and request the minister to intervene. So we must have laws to end. I don't know where
I'm
out of order.
Honorable Lee.
So, Chairperson, I was making a practical example whereby it was an outcry that the minister to intervene. So we must have laws to make sure that the minister intervenes.
Thank you, Department. Can you clarify?
so that DA, Honorable Groenewald, can rest assured that this is in line.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. We need to explain that the Code of Good Practice is a practical guideline to assess how we assess compliance with the Employment Equity Act. This was agreed at NetLeg with all parties because also for BE ratings, employers want to know exactly what they are being assessed on for scoring for BE and accessing contracts with the state. I just wanted to clarify that this is a very important tool, like the Honourable Member has explained, to give certainty in the labour market. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So, I will agree.
Yeah, you support what the proposal from
DA.
Yeah,
I
don't know whether it is procedural, but if it is not, then you can call me to order.
Mm.
Because I wanted to check with Honorable Groenewald. Is he saying that this disagrees with stability in the labor market?
Thank you. ANC agrees the disagreement of the DA will be noted. Then clause 21.
Agree.
Do not agree with the whole bill, eh?
No.
Okay.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Chairperson, requested amendment from the DA side is the insertion of a deletion of section 55.1. The minister may be noticed in the Gazette and in brackets and on the advice of the Commission and with the approval of Parliament make any regulations regarding, and the reason for the amendment is insertion and deletion were limited to the ministerial discretion by requiring that the regulations be improved by Parliament,
okay,
allowing the public to have input on the regulations.
Thank you. That was the motivation of clause 21 from the ANC.
No, yeah, Chair, we propose we accept it. Because I can't agree, because we are making law now, giving the ministers the powers. From there you say the parliament must agree. So it will be a long process. So as it is, it makes the work to be easier and smooth. So I propose that we agree.
Okay, the ANC is agreeing with clause 21, the DA disagree. Clause 22.
Agreed.
Clause 23.
Agreed.
Clause 24.
Agreed.
And then clause
26. Agreed.
Honorable Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On towards 26, this deals with the table of penalties and so on. And, you know, before I get to my amendments, I'm curious about the wording as proposed in the amendment. Let's just take the no previous contravention. So you've got a turnover of, let's say, 2 million rand. 2% of 2 million rand, if I'm correct, is...
Sorry, can you
switch
off, please? Okay.
Are you ready for me, Madam Chair?
No, I'm you.
Thank you very, very much for protecting me. That's very good. Is 2% of 2 million rand is considerably less than 1.5 million rand. And yet, the contravention penalty here says the greater, not the lesser, the greater of 1.5 million or 2%. I cannot believe that was the intention, because the DG motivated that this was to assist smaller businesses. So what's going to happen here is on the smaller businesses, the greater is inevitably going to be 1.5 million. and you're going to be hammering smaller businesses. So putting that aside, our amendment to this table is that it should not be linked to turnover. Madam Chair, some of us in this room have been involved in business, and we can tell you that turnover does not determine profitability. You can have hundreds of billions of turnover and run at a loss. And therefore, it is not a good measure of the impact that such a penalty may have on the business concerned. We believe that the penalty, there must be a maximum penalty, and then the court can determine whether or not they impose a penalty up to the maximum. And the court can determine, and in due argument before the court, what is a reasonable or a proper punitive measure. And so, Madam Chair, in the first instance, I don't really understand the penalties proposed in the amendments they tabled, but in any event, we would table that that they don't get linked to turnover, and that the table as we've presented it, and I believe that should really be tabled so that the table can see it. Was it tabled here? Okay. But that can be tabled, Madam Chair. But it essentially, it says the essential thing is it should not be linked to turnover. And for the record, for the secretary, there's a copy there. Thank you, Madam.
Thank you. Can I give the department to verify?
Report it.
Okay, for the department, Honorable Sekonde.
Chairperson, if we follow the sequences from the presenter, I'm citing examples, I don't want to take us back some of the clauses which we have passed. For an example, there wasn't a to cover his concern. To cover his concern on this one. Somewhere on 16, where we spoke about the law to ask the DC to anticipate the economic and financial circumstances. I think it's covered because we follow. This law doesn't just come from the air. It comes from the consequences of what we agreed upon on top. And then it's covered. I don't think that will harm any person because that's where even us, we must disclose some of the things. So it's covered. So I totally agree with the proposal in front of us.
Honorable Jacob?
Yes, Chair. I have a problem with the amendments of the DA. In fact, what Honorable is saying, he does not want to comply with the law. Because what has happened here, people were not complying with the law.
Mm.
That's why you are coming up with this amendment. So it means you will still not comply with the law. Because if he complies with the law, you won't worry about the charges that will be, where is 10%, where is 4%, because you will comply with the law. So what he's telling us, he says, the state has come for me. And I agree that we accept this, as it is. So if he wants, otherwise, he will comply with the law, and then he won't have any problem.
Thank you. Honorable members, I wanted the department also to clarify, Honorable Lee.
Chair, I just wanted to clarify that Clause 26 talks to the Schedule 4. Mm-hmm. Now, Honorable Lee is talking to Clause 27, and
yes.
I think at the negative, the following one. Now, he's moving far ahead of everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Clause 26 is not what he's arguing about.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
That's what I wanted to correct.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm not saying that argument in that section is relevant. But
you should throw me on a release. Okay, so the proposal of accepting Clause 26 has been raised by the ANC, and then seconded also by Honorable Jacob. Clause 27, the A? 26
is fine.
26 is 5. That's why you are running ahead of me. Yes.
No.
27.
No, I'll put my hands up.
We are on 27 now. Yeah. Is there another list?
Madam Chair, I'm not going to repeat what I said a few minutes ago. Madam Chair, do I have a floor? Thank you. Madam Chair, I've already put it, and I think everyone got a fair understanding, but may I apologize for rushing ahead of you, and it were not my intention to make a mockery of the meeting in any way. So I would be keen to hear the DG's response, but then our amendments as we propose to the amendment stand.
Okay, can I give the DG this opportunity to explain now, Clause 27? I'm Mr. Mkhaliki. The DG is not here, that's Mr. Mkhaliki.
Shopping out.
I want to thank the members for the promotion. We can make sure that I get the salary too. Honorable Chair, honorable members, is that the issue raised by the honorable member is that 2% off 100 million rand is greater than 1.5. Is less in anybody reading it, that's a fact. But honorable members should read the sentence just above that box. It says, this schedule set out the maximum fine. It doesn't say that the court must give the maximum fine. Mm-hmm. It said it's set out the maximum fine that may be imposed in terms of this act for contravention of certain provision of this act. Mm-hmm. The maximum fine. Therefore, it's up to us as a party. Mm-hmm. Up to the company, who will go to the court and say, Your Honor, this is a fine that you need to enforce here. The law says the maximum, impose the maximum. For example, we say that. The company will say, Your Honor, we're a small company, we make 1 million turnover. If you impose 1.5, you bankrupt with us. We think that it makes sense for you to impose on us. 2%. That's the argument that they're going to give to court. This doesn't say that the court is bound to give those funds. It's going to depend on the argument. If we are good enough as a department, we'll always want the maximum fund. If the government is good enough, it must convince the court to give lesser funds. Therefore, for us, that's not an issue.
Honorable Liz and Honorable Jacob.
Madam Chair, the point is taken. Thank you very much. But our de-linking from turnover amendment remains.
Honourable
Jacob? Yeah, I think I have already motivated. Previously, I propose that we agree. We agree with this proposal.
Okay. Agreed with clause 27. Put your mic on, Honourable Kronewald.
Thank you, Chairperson. The DA disagree.
Okay.
Something wrong. As clarity has been provided, and honorable leave is comfort with the clarity that is provided. It's not a deal of check. What is that? Is it by an issue? I must just pursue the mandate. Or is it an objection based on objectivity?
And a mandate.
You put your hand up.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. We all miss things from time to time, and I'm sure Honourable Chow hasn't missed it deliberately, but, you know, I'll explain again for the benefit of Honourable Chow that I raised two issues, and the one was the question of the 2% versus the 1.5 million. Mm-hmm. That has certainly been clarified, and thank you very much, non-DG, for that. Mm-hmm. But the fact is that the linking of penalties to turnover is unacceptable to the DA, and therefore we cannot accept the amendment as stand at the moment. Now, Madam Chair, the question I'm wondering about a little in my mind now is that you've asked for, in a sense, taken a kind of vote on the amendments here, but on our amendments, we haven't made a decision. Now, in a normal meeting procedure, you would deal with the latest amendment first and then move on to the substantive amendment. So I'm not sure where we stand with our amendments.
Honourable Lee, maybe you haven't been following what has been happening. Yeah, you haven't been following because your amendments, you raised your amendments and they were put through to members. And members didn't agree with the amendment. They agreed with what is on the bill. So I don't know why you are you raising that. Honorable Sibande?
No, forgive him, ma'am. The reason is that he didn't concentrate. He concentrated on his own.
Oh,
yes.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Member. Honorable Lee.
Mr. Chair, in terms of what I'm hearing you say then, is that there has been a conscious rejection by members of this committee who are not DA of the DA's proposed amendments. Is that correct? That those have been rejected?
Honorable Jacobs, followed
by Honorable Bao. Members will themselves respond to that question that you are raising.
Chair, I don't think it's correct to say we are deliberately objecting to the amendment. We have read a number of issues. To say them, not even giving us a paper to look on so that we should apply our mind. And we, in every amendment that we're putting forth, we are also motivating why we don't agree with them. So there is no deliberate attempt to say we don't want to. They must convince us and then we can agree. If they can't do that, there's nothing that we can do. They must convince us to agree with them.
And Honorable Lisa, well, I'm really not going to agree with you. If you raise a concern and when members respond, then you speak. You don't listen, please. Honorable Tao.
Honorable Sibash.
No, thank you very much, Chair. I think it must be put on record that as the ANC, there is no way where we agreed with the DA. Because if one goes to the gist of what was happening here today, the honourable member, I can't remember who it is, made the point that it's quite clear that there is a particular interest that the DA is pursuing. And they came to this meeting with that purpose of defending those tax interests. And as the other National Congress, it must also go on record in saying that ours is primarily to serve the interests of the motive force of the National Democratic Revolution, and in this instance it is the working class and the poor. And what we did today here as the ANC was precisely to defend and to advance the cause of the working class. So there is no way where we could see or sit and agree with an antagonistic posture for a particular class against the class that we serve its interest. And in this way, it must be put on record that the ANC disagreed with the DA on their amendments, because their amendments are amendments that seek to work to us, to in actual fact serve the interest of big capital and nothing else. Thanks.
Thank you. Honorable Chubanda.
Thank you, Honorable Tao. Actually, what you raised is the thing which I raised earlier. It's me who spoke about that. And I'll set an example to my honorable member who said. To the honorable member next to me, when he presented this, we requested a substance. Give us thing which will talk to this. Because we were given an ample time, a week, so that we prepare ourselves for this meeting. And then, as Honorable Member Dao said, that hey, there are people who are having this ideology kind of serving a class interest. And coincidentally, the presenter was talking about the issue of the white meat, which is, to provide an example, not to say what negative. But positively, we said, we wanted to repeal some of the apartheid laws, which are not intrusive, because some of the laws are not intrusive. Of course, it's true. We want laws which are going to be intrusive, to take care, to take other people up on board. And also the example which you were citing, that the small business and alike, why should we protect the big business only, what about the small business? Mm. So to us, we talk about the thing which we wanted to balance the lives of the people. And also we are saying that South Africans must be a priority in that regard. But there are people who think that South Africans must never get a priority. Thank you, Secretary.
Thank you. Clause 38. Honorable Liz.
President Chair, I need to counter the accusations that are patently not correct. The fact is that the DA is the party for all South Africans. The fact is that these amendments and the Act itself are detrimental to the very working class which people came to be looking after. And that the way to deal with disadvantage cannot be on a race basis. It cannot be on a race basis. The way to deal with disadvantage is to deal with disadvantage. And this Act, from its inception, is based on race. And on that basis, it cannot work to empower the people who are the working class. So, Madam Chair, we are absolutely committed to redress for the evils of the past, including the apartheid evils and particularly the apartheid evils. And we will continue to act in a way that redresses those evils. But it is the way that we act which is clearly totally different from other parties. But our objective cannot be and should not be challenged in a way that it might have been this afternoon. Thank you.
Chair, I don't need to say this act is based on race. I want to disagree with you because even in business, it's not just white people who've got business.
Yeah.
We also have Indians who've got blacks, who've got cars, who've got businesses. So here we are defending the interests of the working class who are poor. But if they have that interest, they just have to agree with us so that we should improve the lives of other people. They don't just have to think about business, because what they are doing is they are protecting the interest of big business. That's all. They don't care about it. Although you're saying the DA is open to everyone. And those people who are lured into DA, maybe they see many opportunities. That's why they go into DA. So here we want to correct it that this is not based on race.
Yeah.
It covers everybody who has the interest of South Africa at heart.
Thank you. Thank you, Frederick.
Full.
And Honorable Dow, do you want to clarify Honorable Liz? Please, yeah.
Chair, I think just for the record, there's no way or nowhere where I have hated the race card in my argument. I raised a substantive issue that is practical, that is faithful. And, you know, the beauty about the argument of the DA is that, yeah, that's the beauty of the argument of the DA, because the DA out there advances an argument that says equal opportunities for all. But now here we're trying to strike a balance here. We're saying the one that must comply must comply. And the one that must be protected must be protected. So what are we trying to do? We're building an equal society so that we contest the terrain the way it is. If somebody has wronged somebody else, that person must face the consequences of having done someone else's rights, particularly on economic grounds. So all those amendments have been rejected. Equal society or what? Opportunity.
No, Mama, I won't be long, but just to hit. The key fundamental challenges we are dealing about implementation of the laws.
Yeah,
we're dealing about the implementation of the laws, and we're dealing about the compliance, and which is affecting the economical development of this society which we're talking about, and we never push the issue of racialism. It's unfortunate for your information, in our organization where I belong, we had the billionaires, Nakokumed, and I can call them, etc., etc., which are far rich. And we do have lower people, and that's why we are sitting. We are striking a balance that we wanted to protect the working class. Who is pushing, who's making sure that this kind of developing. That's why I was talking that we talk about compliance and implementation that we must implement so that we empower the authorities to have those powers to protect innocent people.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, Chair, I propose that we accept clause 28. I think we have been forced here to debate. And the time for debating, I think it was last week too when the presentation was made. But as democrats, we are allowing those debates. We don't want to impose and dictate to people and say we are dictators. That's why we are allowing that we debate this, although it's not necessary.
Thank you. Clause 28 is accepted. Any seconder? Thank you. Clause 29?
Agreed.
Clause 30?
They agreed.
Agreed. Honorable members, that was the deliberation clause by clause of the Employment Equity Amendment Bill. Next time we will have to invite these members to come early, not when you come and pass the bill, when you come and adopt the bill. Honorable Krunevas, over to Tamayalien. Over to Tamayalien, and it's a little bit of a bit, it's a little bit of a bit.
Can I have the translation, please?
No, it's one of the 11 languages. Honorable members, we have now completed the Employment Equity Amendment Bill, Bill 31B of 2012. I'm not now going to read the report of the Black Committee on Labour and Public Enterprises on the Employment Equity Amendment Bill, B31B 2012, National Assembly, Section 75, dated 30 November 2013. That the Select Committee on Labour and Public Enterprises, having considered the subject of the Employment Equity Amendment Bill, B31B 2012 from National Assembly, Section 75 referred to it, reported it has agreed to the bill. Any proposal for adoption?
I propose that we accept.
Seconda, Honorable Mundisi, Honorable Tau. Honorable, we thought as much, Honorable Bruno, but we were waiting for that.
Okay.
You won't actually agree if you've got Honorable Is next to you. Yes.
You know, my heart goes out to Honorable
Bruno.
Well, the I'm anxious.
No, you see, that is the report.
Mm.
Of the committee.
Yeah.
And that report is about the bill. There's nothing wrong for you to say we agree, of course, with noting our content.
Mm.
But if it says reject, it means that they're rejecting now the bill in its entirety. Can that be clarified so that it goes on record? Because there are areas where they agreed.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks.
Honorable
Krenovoy,
say something.
Yeah, Chairperson, we put a lot of amendments in, and no one was accepted. So at the end of the day, we can't agree with the bill. Because we have amendments, and in that amendments, we do not agree.
Okay, no,
this agreement is been noted.
Honorable
Sivanda. Chairperson, what says then?
Huh?
What says then? I thought I wanted to try to speak in Afrikaans, but you see, when I am about to be emotional, I don't want to do that. I don't want to make some mistakes. The thing is, when the clarity which was requested by Honorable Member Down was that a contradiction. To me, it is a contradiction. You can count how many laws they agreed to and how many laws which they proposed amendments at the end. You disagree.
Oh. Yeah, I
I think it can't correct. The meeting is not yet over, and the Honorable Lee just leave without having given the permission. May we need to tell Honorable Khumeva, because he came here for his invitation, but we are not going to accept this. This is our select committee. Anybody should respect the rules and the policies of this committee. This is arrogance.
I just want to react on that. We ask for permission so that Honorable Lee can be here today. So he's the alternative.
Yeah, but he must stay here until the meeting is over.
Yeah, well, that's I care nothing about it as he stands up.
But who invited him in?
Honorable members, I'm still the chairperson here. Honorable Sivan.
Chairperson, remember, if you recall very earlier, I wanted to raise my hand to say that I will talk at the end. Number one, I wanted to thank you in particular to be strong, to be able to control this meeting. I don't know whether, is it because you are a woman here in this meeting, about how we behave in terms of the procedure of the meeting. Because it is unacceptable that during the process of the meeting, you allow other people just to jump without raising your hand. It's wrong. That's not accepted. Then also, why every time when touch the bills we have new tendencies, while if we are together, if we are alone, we don't have those tendencies? I think some of these things must be calmed down. It mustn't happen like that. Because some people, they forget. If you are here, will you represent Parliament? You represent the committee. I don't want to show my inner part or how I believe I behave in my own meeting. That must be considered. Thank you, Chairperson.
Yeah, thank you very much. I would actually also advise Honorable Khumeva. This is the second time. The last time it was Honorable, it was in your meeting.
Yes.
It was Honorable Van Lingen who came to the meeting. And today, we don't say they mustn't come to the meeting. They've got their right to come. But they must actually adhere to the rules and regulations of the committee. And the Honor, I'm not going to give you that.
Can you call the link to us?
I'm saying, Honorable Khumeva, you must talk to them. If they want to their amendments to be debated, they must come early. They mustn't wait till the end. You know how open this committee is to everybody, but what you must do, it means they don't trust you.
No, that's okay.
They don't trust you. That's why all the time when we are supposed to pass a bill, they come in and confuse you. So, Honorable Members, thank you very much. Let me thank the Department of Labor. I want also to thank the Select Committee on Labor and Public Enterprises. Members, next week, we are meeting on Tuesday from 10 to 16 hours, and Wednesday. And Thursday, we've got plenary. So we are here next week, Honorable Members.
Because of the new
report. Yeah, we have other bills that have been referred to us to this committee. So we are at work as usual. Department, thanks very much for improving the lives of the ordinary South Africans, men and women. Thank you so much. Keep the good work. Thank you.